This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
You know, Maria, I sometimes wonder if we'll ever discover the meaning of it all, working in a place like this.
I've worked in worse places. Philosophically speaking.
Really, Maria?
Yes. I used to work in the Académie Française, but it didn't do me any good at all. And I once worked in the library in the Prado in Madrid, but it didn't teach me nothing, I recall. And the Library of Congress, you'd have thought, would hold some key, but it didn't. And neither did the Bodleian Library. In the British Museum, I hoped to find some clue. I worked there from 9 till 6, read every volume through, but it didn't teach me nothing about life's mystery. I just kept getting older, and it got more difficult to see, till eventually me eyes went, and me arthritis got bad. And so now I'm cleaning up in here. But I can't be really sad, 'cause you see, I feel that life's a game. You sometimes win or lose. And though I may be down right now, at least I don't work for Jews.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea we had a racist working here. I apologize most sincerely.
It is 22 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk-packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, and welcome to day 100. It is 100, Don.
Where's my dinner?
I'd say I got your dinner. Here's the thing about guys. Guys can make anything sound great and hilarious and crude just by going the I got your whatever. Doesn't matter what it is.
In your pants.
Sort of a so's your mom, so's your face, so's your mom's face kind of a thing.
In my pants.
So's your mom's face in my pants. Yeah. That's my dinner. Howdy and hello. It is Friday. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. And why wouldn't you? Why would you not wish to engage in some manner of communication with a program such as this? A program that looms large, straddling the earth like a huge straddling thing. It is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to engage with us telephonically with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, kvetches, limerick, haiku, iambic pentameter. Whatever it is you want to bring to the table. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. He says, seeing the phone is actually turned on. There we go. Awesome. You want to get with us via Skype, you can do that. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username. Rick Emerson Show. That's how you can Skype us. Also, you can email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Don can be emailed. It's Don at rickemerson.com. That is Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Last but not least, it just makes me fatigued even to talk about this stuff. There's a text box that's open as well, or you could just, I don't know, you could just think really hard. And maybe it'll be like sort of a hundredth monkey kind of a thing. It'll all just coalesce into some sort of a Jungian critical mass, and then it'll appear in the collective unconsciousness while we slumber. Probably not, but I mean, it's easier than calling, probably. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to do that. Let me ask you this about your spectacles. Are those actual prescription glasses, or are those from like the Woolworths?
No.
Like where it's on the rotating carousel of like $5 reading glasses?
No, they are actual prescription glasses.
Okay. I mean, they're very nice looking. Don't make me wrong. I like them. Here's the thing is that I was at it. It wasn't a Woolworths. Does Woolworths even exist anymore?
Not here, I don't think.
Does it exist anywhere?
Maybe. I think maybe yes.
Has Woolworths become one of those things like Hydrox that it exists now only in the cultural reference repository of my brain?
Quite possibly. I can't remember this. I think I'm weirdly positive that there is a Woolworths in one of
somewhere.
The weird little towns, like between here and Salem or something. But I can't. But I might be wrong. I might just be. Maybe I dreamed it.
Like in downtown, Kalama,
yeah,
wherever that place is.
Like
all right. Let's see. I had something else to ask you. Wait, Woolworths? Wait. No, it's gone.
Okay.
Whatever it was, gone. Gone from this place. In any event, it's, but I was at the, where was I? I was like at a Fred Meyer or something the other day. I'm not going to get sidetracked by this, I say, fooling no one. But I was, you know, looking for vitamins, you know, like a daily sort of a vitamin thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that it's impossible to find just like a regular, like daily multivitamin? Was that just
no.
a bunch of crap they were peddling to me when I was a kid that you could just take a regular multivitamin? Because every time I go to look for vitamins now, it is the opposite of what they should have been doing all of this time, which is coalescing everything you need into one George Jetson type pill. Now, when I look in the vitamin aisle, it's like all of the many things that used to be combined in one pill have been made into their own pill. So it's like there's one you take that's just like B, and there's one that's like just, I don't know, chrome or whatever the hell, and one that's like just iron, and one that's just vitamin Wonka, and one... It took me like 40 minutes to find a place where I could just buy like a bottle of one-a-day vitamins the other day. It was
really?
The weirdest thing.
I have multivitamins that I pick up at Trader Joe's. It takes me like...
Really?
Seconds.
And is it
yeah.
like one vitamin to rule them all? That's
yeah.
the whole thing?
Yeah.
All right, I gotta start going there because that was at Safeway. And it's like,
I take a special women's multivitamin.
Well,
yes.
Here's the thing, don't tell anybody. I've actually been taking a special women's thing for like the last year or so because Lara bought them in bulk, like way more than she could ever use. And so I was just like, baby, do you mind if I just take some of yours? She was like, no, have at it. So I've just been taking women's vitamins.
That totally explains the boobs.
I was just gonna say, and now my breasts are more supple and pouting because of it. Here's the other thing. This is like when I had to break up with a girl, this was, I don't know, maybe like 10, 12, 15 years ago. And for whatever reason, she just couldn't wait to get away from me. It was like she did everything but just leap off a balcony into a waiting hay truck down below. But she just left most of her stuff behind, including all of her Midol. Which I then found myself, like, I would wake up in the middle of the night sometimes and I would have these, I've told you about it, I'd get these sort of weird leg aches, these, like, shooting pains in my legs. And occasionally I'd wake up and all the Tylenol or whatever would be gone, and then I would stand there in the bathroom just having a long, dark tea time of the soul, wondering if it would make me less of a man to take Midol. And then I would just end up taking it by the fistful anyway. But then spend the rest of the night in that weird Nietzschean wolf hour where you become paranoid about things, wondering what it was doing to my insides right then that I'd just taken a whole bunch of Midol.
Yeah, all it would do is just make you have to pee a lot.
Yeah, that ship has already sailed.
Yeah.
I got a tiny bladder. It's like a thimble. It's like a navel of a flea, really, is what it is. I was in the it was in the Pharmacia section of the Safeway, and it's like they have the rotating, you know, the little carousel of reading glasses. And I found myself looking at those things and wondering if either A, there's only two possibilities with those reading glasses you get at the supermarket. One is that they are unbelievably bad for your eyes. And you put them on, and you might as well just be like gluing magnifying glasses to the front of your face and just giving yourself macular degeneration. The second is that they're actually fine, and then it's that the optometry industry has been screwing me all this time. I don't know which it is.
I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I mean, I have no idea, like, the thing is, I have no idea what the damage is to your eyes if you're reading with glasses that aren't like the proper prescription. But the fact is, most of us go like so long between getting our prescription, you know, up to date. You know, you don't. I guess I don't know about you. Maybe you are one of those people.
I'm real anal retentive about
it. You go to the eye doctor like every year.
I go constantly,
even
whether I can afford it or not, whether it put me in debt or not. I go to the optometrist every year.
See, I don't go back to the eye doctor until my glasses break, or I realize they're just not working anymore.
You just can't see anything at
yeah.
all.
And so I am probably doing more damage to my eyes that way than if I just went and bought a pair of reading glasses and tried them all on until I found one that was actually in focus.
Now, you know why I go to the eye doctor every year? A, because, you know, I like to see stuff and be able to read and whatnot. But also, no lie, I think a big contributing factor was that Burgess Meredith Twilight Zone where he breaks his glasses when he's a kid. Because I watched that when I was like 5, and I was already sort of an introverted bookworm at that point, and that just scarred me. I mean, it just, and I think I'm not alone in that. I mean, it's a cultural reference for a reason. I mean, it horrified an entire generation of TV viewers. And I became so terrified that something would happen to my glasses or that I would not be able to see or whatever. So, no, even when I didn't have any money, had no job, no whatever, I would go every year and make sure that I had glasses that were worked.
Well, here's the weird thing that happened with my eyes. I was actually a glasses wearer for several years. And then I started noticing that it's like my the close-up, you know, my close vision,
yes,
the reading and stuff, was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. But I also noticed that when I was just, like, sitting around talking to people and doing stuff, things seemed more in focus. Because it used to be that I was just nearsighted.
Right.
I got to the point where I was having trouble reading signs on the freeway and stuff like that. And I went to the eye doctor and I said, okay, this seems really weird, but I can't see things that are far away very good, but now I can't see things that are really close very good either. There's this middle section of things that's fine.
The middle distance is crisp.
And he said that happens. You get older and your, you know, everything, the convex and concave of your lenses changes.
Yes.
And it can change. And I was like, but that sucks because it's like, it seems like I've destroyed my far away vision was already bad. Now I've destroyed my close up vision from staring at computer screens like all the time. So what am I supposed to do? And he's like, well, you wear bifocals.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, crap.
Yeah, with that.
So now I just accept the fact that things far away are kind of fuzzy, and I wear glasses to read, and I don't wear glasses at all, which is weird because I was wearing glasses for several years.
Let me understand
now
this. So you went to the doctor with a problem. He offered you the solution, and you said, thanks, but no. And then you just left.
Well, no, I got reading glasses.
Yeah, but you didn't get bifocals, though, which is the whole...
I know.
Because the thing is, now it's just, look, I'm not going to belabor the point here, because it's not like Rick Emerson's a role model for most things. Your eyes are the best friends you have, don't
they? Yeah.
And I'm just, by not wearing the proper lenses, you are exponentially increasing the speed with which you're going to go. But you're just going to be, like, white caning it around town.
Well, I'm wearing the proper lenses. I mean, I have the glasses for when I'm reading, and they are to prescription, and they are correct. And the only difference is now when I'm, like, driving at night...
Things are a little indistinct.
I have to kind of guess if, like, street signs are correct.
That's great. So you're basically...
By, like, the length of the word or something.
So you're, like, doing the fog driving, where you're just looking at the white line by the side of the road to make sure you don't veer into the middle somehow.
I mean, I see everything. I see the cars. I see cows crossing the road. I see pedestrians. It's just that if I'm looking for a street and I don't know where I am, I see the sign, I have to get up, like, closer to it than I used to. And if it's far away, I have to go, well, I'm looking for Mississippi, and that's a long word.
So really, you just
and
become...
It looks like it may start with an M, so I think that's probably going to be it.
You've become a McDonald's picture menu orderer, basically, where you look at a thing and go, that looks kind of like a hamburger. I'll take this thing that is hamburger-shaped.
Kind of.
These things are fry-shaped. I will take those. So that's how you decide whether to slow down, speed up, or maybe make a left.
My vision, my faraway vision isn't terrible.
All right.
It's mostly just like reading freeway signs that are like... You know, a half a mile away.
She drives home to Tualatin around 4:30 in the afternoon, you kids. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up today, we have your job watch, penis watch, stupid criminal of the week. We'll also have top five songs about autumn or fall. That is the top five fall/autumn songs. Plus, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us today. Also, I put up a Twitter thing about this. My whole life, I'm going to be an old person, starting now, because I've just made the decision this morning that I will never use the word tweet as a noun, as a verb, as a whatever. So I Twitter
put up
posting
a Twitter thing.
I put Twitter message on Twitter. I sent a Twitter. Doesn't matter if it's wrong. I just can't bring myself to say tweet, and I know that makes me resistant to change. But we're all going to be okay with that. So I put up a thing on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Today is our 100th radio program, and we just concluded our 100th episode of Legion of News, and now we are beginning the 100th episode of the Rick Emerson radio program. So we'll say this again probably toward the end. In our typical maudlin fashion, but I just want to thank everybody for being out there on behalf of myself, Don, Cheryl, Bruce, everybody, just for helping to kind of keep us here and alive and thriving and broadcasting and irritating people from sea to shining sea. So thank you all for that. It is 503-505-6964, Job Watch, Penis Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, top five songs about autumn/fall. Jim Willig will be here. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A fugitive is caught because of his Facebook status. Polish coffin makers launch a sexy calendar. And an elderly white man boards a plane in Hong Kong, but leaves the plane as a young Asian man.
Okay. Fantastic. Let's see. What else do I have here? I got a couple of emails to get to. So somebody asking that we clarify something about our Gary Collins story from yesterday. Let's see. And that I mentioned this last hour. So before we get to anything else, let me just tease a couple of... Hold on a second. Where's my bag? Where my bag?
I also have a thing that I want to throw out to the audience at some point. I have a contest.
All right.
So...
Hold on. Where are my ham chips?
I can mention that at any point in the show.
I've got right here my hands. We'll get to these here in just a skosh. These are from Spain, so my wife brought these back. These are Ruffles potato chips. Here's the thing. I was going to bring in McRib today because you haven't had McRib. I haven't had McRib. But the thing is, it's back. And
it
also, it's a cult item. That's the thing about the McRib that makes me want to try it. It's not just that it's like a thing they only bring back every occasionally at McDonald's. It is, I think, alone among McDonald's items. Can you think of any other item on the McDonald's menu, with the possible exception of like people eating ironic Happy Meals or something, that has a cult following or that has any sort of a kitsch cultural status?
Maybe the Shamrock Shake.
Maybe.
But not like the McRib. There's actually a website you can go to. It's the McRib Locator.
Really?
And people...
Is there an app for that?
Probably.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it's like a Google map. And people can post when they have found a McRib, and it gives their location, and it will go on the map, and it gives the address of the McDonald's, the city, and that sort of thing.
I love this country. I really do. You know, Richie Bristol had a thing that he had stolen, obtained at one point, and I did everything. But here's the only time I was tempted to abuse my authority as a manager. I very nearly just threatened to fire him unless he gave me an article of clothing that he owned. He had this shirt, and it was like, and it was, you know, you're doing that thing where, like, I know he didn't steal it, I don't think, but he got it from a promotion, or it was like something that the radio station was giving away, and he took one for himself, which is, you know, that's what you do in radio. But I did all of those hints, like, that sure is a great shirt. I wish I had a shirt like that. Are there any more of those shirts? And the thing is, I know the shirt didn't have any special meaning to him. It was just like shirt number 50 of like 7,000 black t-shirts, often stained, that he would wear to work. And I kept sort of hinting that, like, you know, Rick Emerson would really appreciate that shirt. I'd wear it and I'd really love it. To you, it's just a shirt. To me, it would be a cherished object, to be proud of. And I finally just got to the point where I almost said, like, give me that shirt or I'm going to fire you. And then I didn't. But it was this shirt that had this sort of... It was like the pseudo spray painted stenciling, like where it would say like "Viva la Revolucion" or something,
yeah.
Except it just said "Viva McRib" in big letters, and I coveted that shirt so much, and I still do, by the way. So I was gonna stop and get a McRib on the way in, and then I ended up having to do a whole bunch of.
Yeah.
My wife, she had all this. So here's the thing: is that she and her lady friend were traveling. And it's the good news, bad news, because on the one hand, I can't complain too much about however much money she spent, overseas, because her friend, goddamn, her friend spent, I swear to Christ, $3,000 on rugs. Just on rugs.
Wow.
Because, you know, Turkish rugs. But, yeah. I mean, look, here's the thing. A Turkish rug is no better than a rug from anywhere else. Let's just dispatch with that illusion right now. It's not like they got special thread in Turkey or something. And even if they do, you could have it sent here, you know? She bought $3,000 worth of rugs. That, by the way, that's not even costing how much. This is not my wife. This is her friend. This isn't even costing how much she's going to have to. Because I said, well, did she stick them into her backpack? Because, you know, they didn't carry luggage with them. They had a backpack each. My wife is she's all with the whole camping and the whatever. And she's got the backpack that everything goes in there and, like, the spoon with the handle cut off and everything. And I'm like, well, how did she get it home? She's like, oh, she's having it air shipped or whatever, you know, sent over, you know, via, you know, battleship or however they send things over. I mean, $3,000, that's just the rugs. That's not counting, like, at one point, they went into, like, some spicery, and it was, like, you know, someplace where they sell saffron. And I said, well, what's this photo? It's like, oh, that's Michelle. She's buying saffron. And I said, what's that? Well, it's a spice, and it's really expensive and exotic. I don't even know what saffron is for. Do you put it in your sock drawer to make them smell good? What do you do with it?
You put it in paella. You put it in various
things. So it's a food?
Yeah, it's the pistil from a very specific kind of flower.
Flower.
And, like, one, you know, saffron thread comes out of one flower, and they all have to be harvested by hand. And so it's really, really expensive.
Yes, yes, it is. So the guy, there's a photograph of some guy, you know, some guy, Habib, like, ladling saffron into a thing for Michelle. And she goes, oh, that was really expensive. And I said, well, how much is this thing of saffron that Michelle is buying in this photograph? She goes, oh, that's $350. And I was just like, you know, you're the best wife ever. Because she brought Ruffles ham-flavored potato chips. Yes. That's what my wife might have got. But she did have one package of things, and I don't know what's in it yet. I had to pick it up at the post office today. She had one crate of things that arrived from Turkey. And she did that great, the great wife thing of like preemptively diffusing my irritation by going, and a bunch of them are for you. So now I'm all excited. So it doesn't matter. I don't care what else is in there because a bunch of them are for me.
You spent all that money on, ooh, gifts.
Shiny thing. But among them from the Museum of Ham, I'm sorry, the Museo de Jamón, Ruffles ham-flavored potato chips. So there's right there. Also, I have here, let's see. We'll get to these later on today. This is the other reason I didn't get McRib, because we've got other foods to have. Also, I've got, let's see. This is a, now you brought, here's the thing, you brought a dark chocolate Kit Kat today.
Yes.
Which you just saw.
And so, half of it is there sitting there waiting for you, and it's delicious.
So
let me tell you.
We have the ham chips. This is less interesting than the other things, but it's a thing that I've never seen in America. It is a white chocolate Twix bar that she got from Spain.
Nice.
Then there's, then you get to this, where it's just called a loufle. I have no idea what loufle is.
Loufle.
It's a purple and brown bar of something. And then finally, I have this. These are the cocktail jepones. And it just,
jepones.
It's like a, it looks like a bag of salty marbles, frankly. I have no idea.
Picante. That's going to be like...
Something spicy.
That's like a Japanese snack mix, but it's in Spanish.
Yeah, I have no idea what this is. Could be spicy, could be sugary, could be salty, could be all of the above. I have no idea.
It's going to be a little bit spicy because it says picante on it.
Yeah, I got nothing. Mm. But it's like they look... The weirdest looking items. They look like tiny little brains.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we got those. But all of those, Dawn, pale in comparison to the thing that I teased last hour.
Okay.
All right, so I'll show you this, then we'll get underway with all of the other stuff here. So Lara brought me, she said she found this in like some junk store, like in the, you know, in some, the you know, some Diagon Alley section of Barcelona. And she immediately knew that she had to purchase it for me regardless of cost, no matter how what the price was, and it turned out to be very inexpensive. Her friend Michelle apparently didn't understand why this was the perfect Halloween mask for me, but Lara found it. You can see this, by the way, if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures and go to visual aids for November 5th. You go to visual aids for November 5th, 2010, you will see the Halloween mask that she brought for me. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. I give you my Halloween costume for next year.
Oh, my God. Holy crap.
How awesome is that?
That is amazing.
Please to explain now what you're seeing here.
I am looking at the most awesome rubber Michael Jackson mask. White as a ghost, bright red lips, black-rimmed eyes, the floppy hair in the front.
Isn't this awesome?
Oh, my God. That's delightful.
Okay, can I tell you, both of the dogs ran out of the room screaming when I took this out of the package.
I don't blame them.
And first of all, how much does he look like Michael Myers just like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, just as a matter of course.
Well, it looks like the, it looks like the white wrong side out Shatner mask.
Yeah.
Only it's been turned into Michael Jackson.
Also, here's the other thing, is that if this were a mask of any other real person, you know, like a living or once living person, you'd say, well, what a shoddily made mask. The lipstick is just a red blotch, and there's just all of this bad raccoon makeup around the eyes, and it's just, it's all, you know, the white isn't even real looking. But, of course, that's exactly what the actual Michael Jackson looked
yes.
like.
Yes.
I'm going to put it on right now.
Oh, God. Okay.
Hold on.
Okay, hold on. I'm whipping out the iPhone here, too.
Hold on. Let me put the headphones on.
Oh, God.
All right, are we,
We're... It's
right.
To opening itself up. There we go.
Okay, so let's get a... hey now.
Oh, Lord. Okay, that is going to the Facebook.
All right, you know how tempting it is to answer the door or, like, open the studio door in this for the rest of the day?
If it wouldn't make my face sweaty, I would wear that, like, all the time.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the irony of it, Don, is that much like Michael Jackson used to walk around in a surgical mask, I'm going to walk around in this Michael Jackson mask all the time.
It's meta.
And totally. And it's, and it's not illegal, in Oregon. Like, in some states, it's illegal to wear a mask in public. It's like an anti-Klan thing. Here, except, you know,
Like, they don't like you doing it in a bank or whatever. But I could walk around in this for the rest of the day. But my face is already starting to become clammy and sweaty.
Oh, God.
And I think this is made of toxic chemicals. But I'm not sure. All right. By the
Actually, this photo is strangely blurry, and which makes it even more scary, frankly.
Let me what does the photo look like there? Oh, that's just creepy. All right, you can see the mask at rickemerson.com/pictures.
Yeah.
That's visual aids for November 5th.
And if you go to my Facebook page, there's a very blurry picture of Rick wearing this, giving the thumbs up.
All right. Yeah, that's rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids, November 5th. All right, I have to take this off now.
Okay. We need to do a spot,
yeah.
And then then I have to do my my anniversary thing here.
Okay. Here's the thing, though. Just later on, I am going to surprise Greg and Sarah with that.
Oh, yeah.
Just like FYI.
That'll be awesome.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. I'm going to have me some of that Kit Kat, if you don't mind, so forth. All right. Hey, this is a good time while I'm talking about the Ruffles Sabor de Jamón, which is the taste of ham, hint of ham, glory of ham, or whatever. It's a ham thing.
Well, sabor is flavor, so it's
the
ham,
flavor
it's
of
ham,
ham
flavor.
Apparently, it's deliciosas patatas con sabor de jamón para disfrutar en cualquier momento. So that is the Ruffles hint of ham. If you have no idea what the hell I was saying right there, then clearly you need to get thee to Castalia Language Center. That is portlandspanish.com. That's where you can go to find out more about them. Portlandspanish.com. Here's the thing, Don. Did you notice how even though I don't actually know what I was saying, I was able to pronounce it more or less correctly right out of the gate? Because Spanish is a very intuitive language. It's a language that has its own internal consistency. It follows its own rules, not unlike other languages, English. And so you're going to find that if you maybe didn't master Spanish the way you wanted to in high school, if you took a couple of years of Spanish and you found that you got out and you didn't really know what you were doing, it's not the language's fault, and it's not your fault. A lot of people think people will say this like, I don't have any facility with languages. If you can use the phrase, I don't have any facility with languages, here's the thing, you got a facility with languages. They were just teaching you the wrong way, because the way they teach everything in America, for reasons that pass understanding, is they just try to get you to memorize crap and then regurgitate it without giving you any context. Helps no one, least of all you. So go to portlandspanish.com to find out more about Castalia Language Center. Clara Grebel is the owner and operator there, and they actually teach you to speak conversational Spanish by having you speak Spanish in conversations. So you can find out more about it by going to portlandspanish.com. It is Portland Spanish education for adults in classes of no more than 8 folks. So there you go, 8 people in a class, portlandspanish.com. Please do tell them you heard about it right here at the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, awesome. Okay, I got the mask, I got the chips, I got the, and I got your Kit Kat. Are you good food-wise over there?
I'm good.
I ate
half the Kit Kat, and I left the other half of the Kit Kat for you, so you can try the...
What is the thing you were eating earlier? Was it this?
No, it was a cold breakfast burrito from yesterday, and it failed.
Please tell me it was just sitting in your car.
No, it was in the fridge here.
Okay. Because I guess then it would...
I was going to eat it for lunch yesterday. Then my husband called me and said, when you get home, I got you a big-ass sandwich. And I was like, okay, hooray. So I decided not to... Because I was going to eat that burrito. It's one of those chorizo and egg burritos from Jack in the Box, and I had it, like at room temperature, and that was going to be my sort of meal between our show and Ham-Fisted Radio across the way, because
right.
I wasn't, I was going to be doing that at 4. And then my husband said, I got you a big-ass sandwich, so I decided to hold off and wait till I got home, and I put it in the fridge here, and I went, oh, look, breakfast burrito, I could eat it now. And so, just a little while ago, I pulled it out, and it was...
breakfast burrito out of the fridge is going to be terrible.
Cold.
It's the cold that's going to make it not work.
You don't want to... cold scrambled eggs, not good.
No, I could have told you. You should have asked me about that. Why didn't you heat it up? Oh, because you don't like the whole place to smell like food.
Right.
All right, no, you don't want to eat that.
That's bad. Bad.
So anyway, it is our 100th show. And I was thinking to myself, I want to commemorate the 100th show. I'd like to give Rick some sort of a small gift, a token of my appreciation.
I'm sorry, the Michael Jackson mask is that category is already filled. So if that's what you got for me, you're going to be disappointed.
Well, if you will look in the Dropbox, I have a sound there for you.
All right, hold
because
on a second.
I know that you're missing this.
Opening the Dropbox. Oh my God, is this what I think it is? Hold on a second. Wait, let me just lower the sound here for a second. Hold on, just the...
McRib is back.
Are you serious, Jack?
That is so good.
You're getting excited over the McRib.
You know what, Kelly? It's the little things that count.
Jack goes, McRib is back.
Shut up. You know,
you're such a... Check the muck rib.
F you and your little singing thingy.
Right, Jack. Thingy.
Just because I'm really, really, really good looking, you're jealous.
And you're excited about the muck rib.
Yeah.
Muck rib is back.
You wish you could get excited and little things like that.
The thing is, I never get tired of that. Thank you, Dawn. God bless you.
And what do I have in my hand?
Is that an actual McRib?
This is an actual McRib.
Oh, my God.
I brought a McRib.
It's the best day ever. So, really, it was destiny that I not go to McDonald's this morning.
And you walked in and you're like, I was going to get a McRib, but I didn't. And I was like, oh,
that's
you
too
bastard.
Bad.
Too bad.
McRib is back.
It's the inhalation. Like the little pig bastard he is. Awesome. Thank you, Don.
You're welcome.
I didn't get you anything.
I tell you, I had it in my bag coming over here. It's like, just in the 2 hours since I bought it, the grease ate a hole in the side of the box.
Oh, imagine what it'll do to my stomach. People are weighing in saying, you have to have McRib. McRib is awesome. Somebody's just said, Viva McRib. It's true. McRib is wonderful. Rick, you would love the McRib. Seriously.
We may want to warm it up in the microwave later before we give it a try.
Awesome, so forth. All right. Well, I'm gonna have that here in just one moment. Fantastic. All right. Let's see. Well, I guess we should probably begin the news segment. What do you think, huh?
Sure.
Huh? All right. All right, ladies and gentlefolk at the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A man who absconded from parole in California 12 years ago was arrested in northern... Is my sound up or...
It is. No, you're...
Oh. My headphones seem to have gone wonky. There we go. A man who absconded from parole in California 12 years ago has been arrested in northern Montana after disclosing his location in an update on his Facebook page. A fugitive task force in California learned that Robert Lewis Croce, 47, was working in northern Montana after he complained about the cold weather. Croce's Facebook page includes an October 28th posting complaining that his water line froze even with heat tape and wrap after the temperature fell to 20 degrees below zero. When someone asked where he was at, Croce responded with a post that said, Cutbank, a small windswept town just south of the Canadian border. Croce was convicted of making a terrorist threat and a gun violation for using a sawed-off shotgun to fend off an intruder at his appliance store in Ventura, California in 1996. He served less than a year in prison and was paroled. The Los Angeles Times says he was returned to prison for a parole violation and then paroled again in October 98. California authorities sent pictures of Croce to Montana, which officers distributed around Cutbank on Friday. Shortly before noon Saturday, officers got a call that Croce was at a local casino.
And so again, this is on his Facebook?
Yeah. He was posting, complaining about the cold weather on his Facebook page. Someone said, where you at? And he said, I'm in Cutbank, Montana.
Here's the only thing that would make it better is if the someone saying, like, where you at was in fact just some law enforcement agent. They just say, well, let's see if he answers. And they say, don't be a fool, Jenkins. There's no way he'd answer. He's not that dumb. But then they find out he is, in fact, that dumb.
Other recent Facebook posts, he talked about meals he had eaten and that it snowed. And that he won $600 playing Keno.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Not quite as fantastic as...
McRib is back.
I'm just going to use that over and over and over and over and over and over again today. All right. That's just one more...
McRib is back.
That makes me so happy. Here's the thing. I'm not sure how happy the actual McRib will make me, but that's just a bonus at this point. Like, if I enjoy the actual sandwich, that's just, you know, that's icing on the cake, as it were. That's just running up the score then. All right. Do you know if, is this a...
Don Taylor knows how to give a gift.
Seriously. No, you know exactly the way to Rick Emerson's heart. It's not even through my stomach. It's just through my lack of taste. Do you know, is this with or without pickles?
I just ordered a McRib. I didn't ask for anything special, so I don't know if it has pickles or not.
And I don't have a preference because, again, I've never had the McRib. But apparently there's a big sort of what's the word I'm looking for? There's a big division among McRib enthusiasts about whether you get it with or without pickles. That's a thing that just apparently there's no real consensus on whether pickles yes or pickles no.
Well, they don't sell them at every... Funny thing is, they don't sell them at every McDonald's. And so I went online, and I used the McRib Bloatcator, and I actually Googled to see if anyone was about where they were, and I couldn't find anything. And I live right across the street from a McDonald's. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go see if there's any signs in, like, the window that says McRib. And so I go across, and, of course, my McDonald's, I guess they're all fancy pants because they're in Tualatin, they don't have any big posters in their windows or anything. So I drive around the back of the McDonald's, and I'm looking to see stuff, and I'm about to, like, actually exit the parking lot when I look over at the menu board, and there's a big thing on the sign that says McRib sandwich, and I swear to God, I like then scourge, and I swerved into the drive-thru lane just so it's like McRib, woof.
McRib is back.
And then pulled up, and they're like, what do you want? I said McRib, and she said just the sandwich or the combo? Just the sandwich. And then I felt like such, like there was something. I mean, they don't judge at McDonald's. I mean, they see everything there.
How could they?
But at the same time, when it's like 10:30 in the morning and you're like ordering a McRib,
yeah,
it was kind of like, please don't judge me.
Well, it's probably because
it's a gift for a friend.
Because that's it's a very special anniversary, and I thought I'd get him a McRib. Because it's like if you're getting McRib at 10:30, unless you're on the way home from like your graveyard shift or something, that's been working all night, that either means that you're just headed back home to sit and stare at the coffee table before sorting your weed on like a Jethro Tull album. Or you are so enamored of McRib, you cannot run the risk that you won't be able to get one later. Or like you're not even going to be able to like you won't even be able to make it on the drive from work to McDonald's for lunch. Like you'll have to have it in a drawer with you the whole time, like a security blanket made of meat.
Also, when I got here, I realized I had to hide the McRib in a drawer in the kitchen. I couldn't keep it in here because the smell of barbecue sauce was so strong.
Yeah.
The whole room was going to smell like barbecue sauce.
No, I understand that. No. I admire the way you thought ahead. The thing is, and I'm glad you told me this, I was actually wondering this morning after I went to the post office. By the way, can I just tell you this? So, you know, I mentioned something the other day, and you were a little puzzled by this because you hadn't seen it. But I mentioned how they've got those postal workers like delivering things like in Tualatin, like Tim Riley was talking about this in his neighborhood. These guys were like, they're not actual postal employees, but they're delivering the mail, but they're just wearing like, you know, they're like plain clothes.
Yeah.
Like they're not wearing the uniform. And it was a whole thing about how they're like, you know, I don't want to say they're scabs as such, but it's like they're freelance. They're like Blackwater postal guys. So I go to the post office in Selwood, which is where my package, because I wasn't home when they tried to deliver it or whatever. And so they took it and they said, hey, you've got a package waiting for you at the Selwood post office. So I go to the Selwood post office, which is just like, I mean, that's just an exercise in frustration anyway, because you get all that construction on McLaughlin or whatever. But I get there and it's like the guy, you ring the bell for them to let you in. And by the way, here's the other funny thing about the Selwood post office. It's like that Powell's warehouse place that's over like in whatever, Northwest or something. You know what I'm talking about? The Powell's warehouse that's way out in the boondocks.
Yeah.
Where it's like you drop off books in bulk. It's kind of like that. Like, it's not really consumer friendly. There isn't like a front door and a counter and whatever. There's like a service door that you go in. And they must have had some incidents in the past because they've got a series of stickers, each in larger print than the last, saying, stand back, door opens outward. And the door swings open silently. With the unbelievable stealth of like a jungle cat, and it's made of metal and it's heavy and there are no windows, so you never know when the door is going to open, and it doesn't have like an alarm or a clang, or it would just be like a poof into your face. So there's all of these stickers saying stand back, step back, ring bell and get away. Anyway, so I go inside, and the guy who helps me, I swear to God, is wearing cut off jeans, like pants that he's just cut off at the knee. And like a shirt, like one of those wacky, it was like Jim Willig had the last time he was here. It says, you know, like government pot smoking, you know, program, you know, medical student 515 or whatever. It was one of those, you know, like property of Alcatraz swim team shirts and like Oakley sunglasses with the weird tether like inside and like dangly crucifix earrings. He's like, hey, it's up. And I said, I'm sorry.
They lack standards at the post office, haven't they?
Yes. I said, and to his credit, he was really polite, but it was like a sort of Spicoli kind of, you know, is this the post office? That's it, dude. It's like, okay, I'm here to pick up a package. And he's like, all right. You know, and he goes back and he looks and he finds a package. Didn't ask for my ID. Didn't ask me to do anything. Like brings me the package and like all but tosses it at me. And then I left and I'm like, all right, have a good one. He's like, rock on. I'm like, okay. I have no idea. He could have just been some guy that like knocked over the place and is just there rummaging through packages, you know, but to cover his like those guys that held up a Starbucks but then stayed and served coffee for like an hour to make extra money. He could be just doing that for all I know.
The post offices, we have actually two post office facilities in Tualatin, and they work in sync, but they're basically designed in such a way that they really illustrate the priority that the post office places on people who are spending money versus people who are just picking crap up. Because if you go to the post office, it's like there's two counters and there's like – it's – brand new and it's gorgeous and there's stuff and there's automated machines and there's like a big long room that's a bank of like glistening silver post office boxes, and there's one area that you go buy stamps and mail things, and another whole area that's just the gift center if you want like the fancy Mickey Mouse boxes and stuff like that. And everyone's really nice and really friendly and really cheerful and really efficient. But if you have to pick something up, you have to go to this other place that's another like 2 miles down the road, and it's just a warehouse, and you go in and it's just this beige, giant cold beige concrete room, and there's a window with like, you know, glass and a little hole cut in it that you talk through, and you go up and you're like, I need to pick up a package, and there's just one guy. He's like, just a minute, and he wanders off, and you stand there in this icy cold prison room waiting for him to show up with your stuff.
Totally.
And it's kind of like, you know. But yeah, and it's sad because if you go to the actual post office and go, I needed to pick up this package, it's like, oh, we don't have those here.
Yeah. No,
you have to go to the sadness room down the road.
The cube of despair. The post office is just the weirdest. I mean, this is like all well-traveled comedic ground and everything, but you think that like at some point, like the thing about the post office is, I used to make this observation about the DMV, but it's really not true anymore about the DMV. It is true at the post office where it's like you said that we were talking the other day about customers and how everybody complains about customers are jackasses. And then I said, well, yeah, but customers are just drawn from the normal population base. So you figure the percentage of jackass customers would only be as high as the percentage of jackass people. Well, like everybody at some point has to go to the post office because there's just stuff you can't do at your house. You know, like there's just packages that you got to get wrapped, or you got to get a special, you know, like bubble taping thing, you know, to so it doesn't get broken, or you got to go like, you know, you got to go pick something up, or you got to set up a post office box. You have to go to the post office at some point. And every time you're there, it's like you're just behind every backward ass idiot on the planet. Like, you know who I always get stuck behind? I always get stuck behind the woman who's trying to figure out which kind of stamps she wants to buy. And so the one's going, well, we've got love, teddy bears. These are Ellen DeGeneres, and it's for the Humane Society. They've got dogs. And then the woman says, do you have Shih Tzu? Well, let me look. And then she opens a drawer, and it's like you're just back there just going, kill, kill, kill. You know, just more than anything, just hoping that like a tiny pea-sized meteor enters the atmosphere and hits the woman in the head directly in front of you. So she can get... That's like the guy who's always ahead of me, who is trying to mail something that's just incredibly awkward. What is this? Well, it's a school of goldfish. I've got to get it to New York by tomorrow. And he's not taken step one to package it. And so he's got like, do you have any twine for these goldfish? You know, he's like standing at the counter trying to get the stuff to wrap his package. And everybody else in line has their stuff done, packaged, signed, sealed, stamped, ready to drop off. But this guy is always ahead of all of us. Always, always. No matter when you get there, that guy is ahead of you. I don't know why.
Here's the most interesting thing I learned about the post office when I was doing my chocolate business and having to mail lots of things. And I was doing my own postage at home, and I had all my own boxes. It was all priority mail. I'd print out all the postage and slap the things on myself and had it all taken care of, take it to the post office. If I'd go into the post office proper, if it was during working hours, they would take the boxes and they would look at them one at a time and put them on the scale and make sure I weighed them correctly and stamp them with a thing that says perishable, and it would take forever. Or I discovered, because I got there really late one day, I could drive around the back of the post office and just put everything on their loading dock.
Hey.
With all of the other packages that are sitting there on their loading dock, because the mail trucks come at the end of the day and they just offload all of their crap onto the loading dock.
That's thinking is what that is.
And you know what? Still gets mailed.
Hey, well done. Good for you. I never thought about that.
But I also thought to myself, I don't think most people are aware of this, because otherwise I think people would be coming back here and stealing things off the loading dock.
Well, yeah. Well,
because there's like 50 packages just sitting on the loading dock.
That's a thing that I might be afraid to do now because of, you know, the terrorism and so forth. Like if they try to catch you, if they catch you just setting something on the loading dock, that they might view that. Here's the thing. They might view that as the leaving a bag unattended at the airport kind of a deal.
They don't, though, because I had brought them there, and then the first couple
of times. Did they see you do it?
A couple of times, yeah. The first time they just told me to go around and do it. Then I came back the next time, and Patrick helped me carry them, and we stacked them up there. And we kind of, like, rang the bell at the back door and said, hi, we just have some packages here. We were just leaving them. And they're like, yeah, okay, don't worry about it. And then they just walked away. So the third time we went, we just left them there. And then after that, it was like, okay, we'll just take them to the loading dock. Because we have like 15 boxes that need to be mailed, and I don't want to stand there and deal with them examining each one to make sure I did it properly.
Well done. I'm impressed. All right. Well, there you go. So now your day has become a little bit more efficient, courtesy of this. See, right there, that's worth your 32 cents. Jesus, you can't really, honestly, you can't even mail anything for 32 cents these days. Stamps are effing like 44 cents or something. By the way, mine will have Tom Mix on them, just in case you're wondering. Let's do one more. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Still to come, we got your Job Watch, Penis Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. Mr. Big Jim Willing is going to be in the studio with us. And also, I got to try that. Got to try the McRib. Mm-hmm. And we'll have an answer to the Woolworths question here in just a second. We have the answer to whether or not Woolworths is still in existence.
Well, Conan O'Brien returns to late night TV Monday as a host on TBS, and his commercials have been airing for some time now.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Conan. You know what? You know why I didn't have that ready? I swear to God, I was just staring at the Michael Jackson mask on the screen. It was like his eyes were whorls of evil into which I was being pulled. All right.
Hey, is it November 8th?
Not yet, Chief.
He'll be here soon.
So this is what, it's Monday that he starts?
Yes.
And it's Monday at what time? Do we know if it's a late night? Is it going up against the other shows? I should know that. But that's one of those things where how marketing is sort of strange now, because I don't think I've seen many of the actual commercials. I knew that he was about to start because you just can't avoid him. He's, you know, kind of in the news everywhere. But I don't know that I actually know the logistics of when the show is airing. You know, if it's like a Monday through Friday, 11:30 thing. All right.
Matthew Bologna with the Hollywood Reporter says O'Brien really wants to make his new gig work after his awkward departure from NBC.
It's absolutely a shot at redemption for Conan O'Brien. I mean, the way that he was sort of cast out of NBC, he took it very personal.
Bologna says the pressure is on for O'Brien.
For the cable universe, the expectations are high. He's a big star. He's coming over from network TV.
You know, the thing about Conan O'Brien is he, of all of those guys, is probably the only one who could make the transition to TBS and not have it look like a huge step down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you come from network TV, and even though that means much less than it used to, there's still a certain marquee value there. There's a certain, the network has a little bit of cachet to it. The TBS, because, I mean, isn't TBS the network? Don't they just have the thing now where it's like the TBS and then the big smile? The big wedgie, but you know, it looks like an orange wedge that's a big smiling face underneath the TBS.
Does TBS have any other original programming, or is it all just reruns of things that are in syndication?
That's a good question, because there's TBS and there's TNT, which are sister networks to one another. And TNT is the one that's all drama, right?
Yeah.
That's the We Know Drama, and then the TBS is the whatever, we tell jokes or something. But I don't know if there's any actual original programming on there. TBS is now, I think, the way that the USA Network used to be before they started before Dead Zone. Because Dead Zone was the thing that put the USA Network on the map in terms of original programming. And then they had, isn't it Monk? Was it Monk on USA?
Yeah.
So,
and Psych.
And I think TBS is they're in that pre-Dead Zone era where it's just, you know, it's just like a bunch of cast-offs from other networks.
Yeah. Conan's going to be on TBS weeknights at 11.
Awesome. Good for him. Well, I'll be watching. All right, so there you go. It is the Rick Emerson radio program still to come. Mr. Big Jim Willig, Job Watch, Penis Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, and I'll be digging into my McRib on the other side of this. Plus, we'll try these cocktail japones picante or something. And at the front, though, here's the weird thing about it is, like at the bottom where it would normally say like the caloric content or just like a slogan, it's one of those words, but it's like bracketed by question marks. So there's some query about the nature of the product, like even from the manufacturers, like they're quite
como?
They're quite uncertain about some facet of this product's taste or ingredients.
Big Jim Willig, if he's never tasted a McRib, he'll be interested to do this.
Here's the thing. I bet he's tried the McRib. This is my guess. I bet he's tried the McRib more than once, like three times, doesn't really like it, but has tried it several times to see if he would like it, to see if he could sort of learn to enjoy it. That's just a guess. All right, we're back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program here at the Emerson News Network. Don't forget, as we get into autumn, also known as fall, make sure that... I've already tipped my hand, though. I can't do the make sure you don't take a fall off the roof kind of a thing. That wouldn't work.
Why? Well, why not?
Because it's...
See, you stumbled...
Yeah, no.
...over yourself.
No, that's true. No, I just lost confidence in the joke there. Hey, did I ever tell you about this time that I went to a midnight mass at a Catholic church in San Francisco? It's the oldest Catholic church on the West... It's the oldest Catholic church west of the Mississippi. I believe the oldest Catholic church in America is St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. But this is, like, runner-up. And Lara had never gone to midnight mass, which is the thing they do right before Christmas. And I told her it was going to be awesome. I said, you know, look, you know, even if you're not religious, the sort of pageantry of it and the ritual, and it's all very pagan because they swing the big thing of incense. And, you know, it's got the cool Spanish architecture, but it's also got the stained glass windows and the whatever. And, you know, and I said, you know, midnight mass is always really, really crowded. You know, and it's people who, you know, go there who don't go to church the rest of the year, you know, and it's a sort of glorious kind of, you know, pageantry to behold. And so we go there, and first of all, it was depressing because the church is just empty. It was just like after I think large sections of America had realized they just didn't have any interest in going and being scolded about their sins they committed in the afterlife. So they just opted not to go anymore. And then so the priest gets up and he's giving the sermon and he's talking about how when Jesus arrived, that many people thought that he was going to come to free them from the Romans. And so they thought that when the Son of God arrived, he was going to be a warrior, he was going to be a crusader, he was going to lead them into battle and throw off the yoke of Roman oppression. This is all to get to one statement he made. It was the weirdest thing, where he said, you know, and when Jesus arrived and he was just a child, people were disappointed. That wasn't the kind of savior they had wanted. When the prophecy foretold the Son of God, they wanted a savior who would chew their food for them. And then he just didn't say anything, and he just looked out at the congregation for a while. He just let that one kind of sit there. They wanted a savior who would chew their food for them. And he let it kind of ring out like a sustaining guitar chord played at the climax of some exciting musical event. It would chew their food for them, Don.
I'm still pondering that. It's conceptually, it's very interesting.
I'm saying you either the humor there is not going to it's not going to manifest itself later. That's a thing. You either find that story amusing or you don't. There's not going to be any. That's not like a flower where it blooms later on this afternoon or something. Or on the way home, you go. Oh, I get it. Tai Chi.
Because I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be funny or profound.
The thing is...
It might have been the delivery.
I think it was supposed to be profound, and then when he said it, it was one of those things where Laura and I just looked at each other and just sort of did a... Okay. And so now and again, we'll just sort of, you know, just like at slack moments in conversation, couples do this sometimes. Like when you might say, like, McRib is back. Now and again, we just go like, I want a savior who will chew my food. And then we just giggle to each other. That wasn't very funny. This whole uninteresting anecdote was brought to you by CJ's High Climbing Services. Find out more about them at CJ's High Climbing. Look, maybe you want a savior who cleans your gutters. I mean, maybe that's the thing. Look, not going to happen. Sorry, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to bust on your whatever, but it's, he's busy. That's just not going to take place. Look, if you could, let's be honest. If you couldn't find a time to smite the Romans, he's not going to come and get, like, geraniums out of your downspout. I mean, it's just, you know, you're waiting on a foolish expectation of the Almighty that's not going to actually transmogrify into anything real. So rather than waiting for Jesus to do it, I would call CJ's High Climbing if I were you. CJ'sHighClimbing.com is the website, or 503-228-9278. That is 503-228-9278. Whether it's something dangerous, something messy, something unpleasant, or just something you just don't have time to do. It just feels like you think like it takes a lot of time, you know, out of your schedule. Or if it's something like, you know, you got your, you know, you feel like your husband's going to be doing it, or you got like an elderly relative or a parent that's going to be doing it. And that's not going to take time from your schedule, but taking them to the emergency room after they fracture both of their hips is going to, you know, that's not going to be a walk in the park. So maybe as you head into the holidays, you just, as Don suggested last hour, get yourself a gift certificate or maybe just an envelope of cash, and you hand that to the guys at CJ's High Climbing. You just have them go over and just clean the gutters, the downspout, the roof, the walkway, the whatever, for your parent, the uncle, some elderly or infirm member of your family. It is your Christian duty.
A neighbor that you care about?
That's
that
sure.
That you see tottering around in their yard and you're afraid they're going to fall to their death?
Because, and then if they do, then it's like a thing of like, well, do I stay inside and pretend that I don't hear their screams of agony, or do I go out and help?
And if they die, then that house could be known in the neighborhood as a death house.
Right.
And that will, like, affect your property values.
Or here's the thing. You know, if they die and they sell that house, they might sell it to like, some upwardly mobile family that raises the property values. Then your taxes go up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing? They have to deal with gentrification.
Nobody wants that.
Then Whitey comes in. And then things go to hell. CJ's highclimbing.com is the website there. CJ's highclimbing.com, 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. Tell me you heard it here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. It is show number 100, our 100th episode today. So thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused and informed by this, a cavalcade of whimsy such as the world has never known. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. All right. And so forth. All right. Let's see here. I'm just looking through these messages here. Okay, this is about Woolworth. So we were asking earlier if Woolworth was still in existence. It says, Woolworths exist in Mexico, Australia, and the United Kingdom. It also still exists in Ireland. However, no longer in the United States. The Woolworth Company closed in 1997 and changed its name. This is like becoming a Paul Harvey thing. The Woolworth Company changed its name to one of its successful stores. Anyone? Don Taylor? Big Jim Willig?
Gimbals.
No, but I like the reference. Thank you. Nor was it Hammacher Schlemmer.
Ooh, very nice.
Woolworth changed its name to Foot Locker because Foot Locker was like a spin-off store. And so apparently they couldn't make any money with the Woolworths because, I mean, you know, Woolworths. And then they just said, like, F it. Kids love shoes, though. And so then everything that was a Woolworths apparently just became a Foot Locker.
Oh.
So there you go. So there you know. And knowing is, in this case, like 90% of the battle.
Woolworths was always kind of like the foster child of the Walgreens kind of universe.
You know, the thing about Woolworths is, it's funny how, by the way, Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio, he's going to be, we'll mention this again later, he's going to be headlining at the Baghdad coming up here later on, January 14th, Friday. Times and tickets to be announced. You can find out more at facebook.com/Jim Willig, two L's, one G.
That's right. Willing without the N.
So there you go. That is facebook.com/Jim Willig. Headlining at the Baghdad. That's a big deal.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd done the Monsters of Comedy show, which I came on and promoted as well. That was an awesome show. Place was packed, and I had a great time. Talked to the booker of the place, friend of mine, Tristan, and made mention, like, I wanted to come back, and he's like, well, pretty much the rest of the year has been well booked out, but January was open, and he's like, I'd love to have you come back and actually headline. So I'm excited. I can't wait. It'd be like about a half hour, 45 minutes of just the sultry tones of Big Jim.
And is that one of those – this is a dumb question because I know, like, Sarah and Greg especially, they have a lot of comics on. They just had
the Sklar brothers.
Skalachna brothers.
The Sklar brothers?
Well, see, and
the twins?
Like, here's the thing. Can I just tell you something? I like to think that this is because I am not aged, but you and I are, I don't know, maybe roughly the same age.
Okay.
Which is a thing I say to everybody, but I think
you're
it's
timeless.
Actually... timeless. But, you know, it is mostly true, but I know that I am like that guy who thinks that, like, every chick at the clothing store is, like, the same size as the wife, and, you know, she's about your size. you know, it was just like, you know, but...
There's a painting of you getting older somewhere.
but I like to think that it is not an age thing, that it's just because I don't necessarily follow the world of comedy. You know, like, I follow music, even necessarily music that's not really made for me. And, you know, I follow TV shows or movies, even things that I'm not really going to watch. Comedy, though, it's like I'm so out of the loop. Somebody will say, like, so-and-so's coming to town. They're a famous comedian. And it's like I've never heard of them. So yesterday, though, Sarah and Greg, who, you know, the Fun Employment Radio, which airs around 6 p.m. or so via funemploymentradio.com, which they tape here in this same studio, they came in and they were just like bouncing off the walls. First of all, Sarah, and if you haven't heard yesterday's Fun Employment Radio, which had been on November 4th, I strongly urge you to do so because Sarah had her voice. She woke up and her voice was just, I mean, you heard her talk.
Yeah.
She was like, no exaggeration, she sounded like Kate Winslet when she's floating around on the frozen door at the end of Titanic. Come back!
Yeah, she went a little karaoke crazy the night before and woke up with completely just totally wrecked vocal cords.
Is that what it was? I thought she was sick.
No.
Oh, I know the sympathy for her because I thought she had like her immune system had imploded.
No,
she was just drunk and screaming.
Yeah.
Bob Seger and Jägermeister will tend to thrash one's vocal cords.
Well, she does this thing where she sings Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Oh, no.
And she does it when she's drunk. So it's like she knows, you know, like so every line of the song becomes, you know, the climactic finish.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that explains it. Well, F her. I just felt bad for her. But yeah, anyway, so they have she's like, well, we have to, we're really excited about today's show. You know, we're really nervous. We have the Sklar brothers in. And then she looks at us, and Don and I did the thing of going, like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Woo, you know, well, that's something. How did you?
That's a great get.
I like the thing they did.
And then, you know, in the kitchen later, Don and I, it turns out that, like,
I looked at Rick and I go, okay. And I should know who they are and care why.
And I was like, I don't know.
And Rick goes, I don't know. And I was like, oh, okay, good.
But apparently they were really great guests. The thing is, I didn't see them come in and I didn't see them leave because we were in the kitchen. But apparently they're twins or whatever. So in my mind, they just became the Proclaimers. I don't know what they really look like, but in my mind's eye, they have the flat top and the horn rims, and they're singing the 500 Miles song. I don't know why. Please explain. Who are the Sklar brothers?
The Sklar brothers, twin brothers, they do stand-up together. They've done a couple of Comedy Central specials. They were the voice of the conjoined twins on The Oblongs, a short-lived cartoon.
Okay.
As well, they had a show on ESPN Classic called Cheap Seats, which I instantly fell in love with because it was basically taking the really old bad coverage of Wide World of Sports back in the day. Back
right.
when they had to fill in between the Olympics and stuff, so they would go cover arm wrestling matches and roller derby. And what the Sklar brothers would do is, minus the silhouette at the bottom of the screen, they would Mystery Science Theater that sporting event. And it was genius. And actually, to the point where I'm like, I pray to God that the Misty people know about this show. And sure enough, there was an episode where the Sklar brothers are doing their thing to the sporting events, and then the silhouette comes up at the bottom of the screen, and it's Mike and the two bots, Mystery Science Theatering, the Sklar brothers, who are doing their thing.
Okay, that's awesome.
And it was like my brain just melted into my ears. It was incredible.
See, that's – it's not like I have anything against them. I just didn't know anything about them. I would totally – that's the thing about comedy, is that the comedy and comics, I am usually just – ignorant. I have I have no preconceived notion of most comedians because I've just never heard of them. Here's this the quintessential Rick Emerson, not know what the hell he's talking about. This story is from like, I don't know, maybe 2.5-3 years ago when somebody was like Richie or Scotty or somebody came to the office when they're like, hey, do you want to have a comic on the show? I don't know, this afternoon. And I said, probably not. You know who? You know, because my default setting is always just no.
Yeah.
And I said, who? And he goes, I don't know, Patton something? Osmosis? Do you know what, Patton? I was just like, and I waved him away with my hand. Get out of here. I got to prepare this penis watch. That's what people tune in
tell
for.
Tell Johnny Haha that go bark up somebody else's tree.
Yeah, seriously. You know, tell him the Chuckle Hutch might want to book him, but Rick Emerson's got bigger. You know, and then, you know, and then of course, like 6 months later, after I had learned what a tool I was, because then my friend Nate Baker was like, he's like, I know you don't like comics, but I had a road trip coming up. He's like, listen to this guy. Tell me if you like him. And he hands me this you know, this CD, and it turns out to be the Werewolves and Lollipops album from Patton Oswalt.
Yes.
Listen to it, like, this is genius. Why do I know the name Patton Oswalt? Why does that sound familiar? Damn. And then so like 6 months later, he comes back through Portland. And I we contacted his people. We're like, we'd love to have Patton on. They're like, thank you, no. And
that was, oh, the burn.
They just told us to get bent, so which I had coming. So I just I think it's because in my brain I can only juggle knowledge of so many aspects of pop culture at one time, and I think comedy is the thing that I just throw overboard.
Well, it used to be there were the just the two venues where in which you would find out about acts such as comedy, where it'd be either radio or TV, and that was it. And if they got far enough into movies, you already knew who they were. Like,
right.
You never saw like an introducing this stand-up comic you've never heard of before. So now that we've got all kinds of with the internet and everything, all YouTube and websites and everything else, there's such a wide net now that people can get to such an incredible level of fame and fortune and still not be a household term, because the household's already being inundated from all the other angles and all the other media outlets.
Well, it's like, what is that? Well, there's the auto-tune the news guy.
Yeah.
Who, you know, do you know this? You know that this is amazing. I read this story the other day. That auto-tune the news video that got all of the traction, one of the guys talking about they're raping everybody around here and snatching up your peoples. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Don, do you know the you know the video of which I speak? So the guy, the auto-tune the news guy, whose name I can't recall, but he made that video using the news clip, and he got the guy in the news clip's permission with the understanding that, like, look, I'll just give you half of whatever the video makes on iTunes, because that you can download that auto-tune song, the video from iTunes. It's like, I'll give you half. And the guy's like, whatever, man. And so that guy in the clip, the news guy, has just purchased a brand new home with his iTunes proceeds from that video.
In his car he drove up and made out of cash.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's like, but probably I would imagine that 90% of the country has never heard of either of those guys. Because we've just become such a thing where every, you know, all the niches are like an inch wide but a mile deep. And I think it is that thing with comedy too. So here's a dumb question. So you got this show coming up January 14th at Baghdad. Is
no one's heard of me either.
So. Is this, well, that's before the 14th. After it, it's going to be like Kinison was on the Young Dangerfield, you know, the Dangerfield Young Comedy Special.
That's
you'll have
feeling
a development deal by later that day.
We're trying to get Don Rickles to MC. I hear he's good.
But is Portland a good town in which to do comedy, or is it just too diluted?
Well, for a while, I would say absolutely yes. There was just a very hard time to kind of get Portland, the majority of Portland, to kind of drop the kind of cooler, too cool for school mentality and kind of like laugh at themselves a little bit, come out, and you had like Harvey's, and that was pretty much the only game in town. Now, with Helium and the Bridgetown Comedy Festival coming into town every year, it's becoming more and more easy to create a venue wherein people will come out and actually enjoy watching live comedy again, as opposed to just waiting for it to pop up on Hulu or any of the other MySpace YouTubes. So the MySpace YouTubes, they're everywhere.
There needs no new
with the Twitters and the FaceSpace and the things that the kids are blogging.
The interlocking tubes that connect America.
Just say the corporate, then just go new media. That's what we call that now. New media.
The new media, absolutely. Yes. So now it's becoming a little bit easier, but again, there is still this sense that like Portland gets very much overlooked. There's Seattle, obviously. They've got the big powerhouse. You got L.A. And in between, Portland used to be a decent stopover spot, but now it's becoming more and more popular once again, thanks to the hard work of guys like Andy Wood putting together the Bridgetown show and the guys over at Helium bringing in gargantuan names into town and names that you wouldn't imagine would ever stop by if only at the Schnitz for way too much money.
Right. It's so sad that I think the last comic we had on the show was that guy that has the talking jalapeno puppet.
Oh, Jeff Dunham?
Jeff Dunham.
Yeah.
I think it was the last comic we actually had on the show. And that's how my mind works. I'm like, who is he? Like, he has a talking jalapeno puppet. I'm like, sold! Let's have him on
Get him in here!
Every day! Awesome. Mr. Big Jim Willig is with us still to come. We got the top five songs about fall. We got your job watch, penis watch, your stupid criminal of the week. Ooh, and I got to try the McRib here in just a second, because if you haven't heard... Oh, I failed. If you haven't heard...
McRib is back.
I'm going to play that over and over for the rest of the day and make myself smile. Thank you, Don.
I heard that comment you made, by the way, in the last break about, like, I would imagine Big Jim has...
I would imagine you've tried two or three. You haven't liked them, but you've tried it enough to make sure that you really, truly didn't care for it.
Well, yeah. What turned me off instantly, I mean, the process, I mean, when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, God, anything with McDonald's on it, I didn't care. I would eat the cups. I would eat the cardboard that the fries came in. But when the food comes out and it's pressed into the shape of what the food should be, like there's some Play-Doh Fun Factory in the back and they're just like pouring in some gelatinous sludge on one side and just like cranking out the McRibs.
McStruder.
Yeah, the McStruder. There we go.
McDonald's does the same thing culinarily that Portland does architecturally.
Wow,
which is
deep.
Where it will tear something down and then recreate a new version that has a picture of what the old thing actually originally looked like. So like with McDonald's, you're right, it's not like chicken. They just take chicken and they just make it into like a watery goo-like paste, which they then reform into something that is supposedly shaped like a chicken. So does McRib, which I understand has no bones, has no...
No.
I mean, it's just like a meat paste, which they then form back into the shape of actual meat.
Yeah, right. the meat-shaped bones, yeah. I think, is just hilarious.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be... I mean, look, it's got to have something going for it, because people, you know, they keep bringing it back, and people keep buying it.
And people do say it's delicious.
I'm looking here at the text about the many unironic endorsements of the McRib right here, including one man who says... this is our friend Keelan, who says... He says, just my luck, I've been talking of the McRib, and you might hate it, but if you like it, Rick, you are an honorary black man. So there you go. So now the pressure's on. Now
yeah, really?
It's like I...
I didn't realize that black men universally loved the McRib.
Well, no. This is not Rick Emerson saying that, you understand, because Rick Emerson
no,
would
I
not
know,
make
but
some
I mean,
broad generalization.
This gentleman in the text box, who I believe is actually a black man, and he's speaking for all his brethren and saying that...
There was a vote, I guess, that was taken or something.
there was a memo
that went out.
Tyler Perry, no. McRib, yes.
The McRib Black Man Caucus.
Of 2010. Awesome. Were you there?
The 1 million McRib Eater March.
It's more of a waddle or a slow trundle.
Okay. At the news desk, more of her rapier-like wit, Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Just defibrillation kiosks every 100 yards.
The Polish funeral experts Linder have produced a calendar which shows models in sexy lingerie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Calendar, Linder.
Barely knew her.
Okay.
Oh. All
right. Which shows models in sexy lingerie draped over the caskets performing movie scenes from films like James Bond, Reservoir Dogs, and The Godfather.
I don't understand. Hold on. There's too much happening here. This is like a turducken story. There's sexy chicks on coffins recreating movie scenes from what? Huh?
Films like James Bond, Reservoir Dogs, and The Godfather. If you would like to play along at home or over there across the table, you can go to rickemerson.com/pictures. There are photos of the chicks in the coffin.
Yeah, like how do you recreate a scene from Reservoir Dogs on a coffin?
don't know.
Well, let me look
Stuck
here.
In
Hold
the middle with you. That's the
only black
scene.
And white cover shows a close-up of a woman in a frilly thong and suspenders holding a gun behind her back, while on the back, a couple are apparently making love on top of a coffin. Inside, the months begin with a man being forced into a coffin at the barrel of a Tommy gun and end with a curvy, topless blonde posing in front of a mirror. Company spokesman Bartek Lindner said, it has a sort of Hollywood feel with a darker edge.
Oh, my God.
Okay, seriously, look, don't get me wrong. I'm all for chicks on coffins. There's something hot about that. We all know that's true. I'm looking at these photographs here, and I don't see any of the film recreation. Now, that's not to say these aren't alluring. They certainly are.
Yeah, I don't know. I looked at the four pictures that I found that I was able to share. I looked at them, and they didn't look like they were from movies to me.
By the way, Aaron Duran, somewhere, if you listen really, really closely, you can hear the sound of all the deadbolts in his home being closed and all of the blinds being drawn. Maybe a squeegee being removed from underneath the sink. These are some fetching young ladies. I don't know why. Look, here's the thing. We're all drama nerds here. Yeah. What is the thing with like chicks and cemeteries taken in tandem being hot? What is that all about?
Well, it's the taboo nature of sex, I guess, when we're all young. It's something that, you know, we long for, but we're told, you know, so much bad things surround it, so many good things on, like, the subversive level. With death, there's even less to kind of go on. You kind of get laid down in a box and they get thrown in the ground. There's a lot of boo-hooing, then a lot of food and an open bar kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you know...
I'm just saying, you take a hot chick, you put her in the cemetery, she's like five times as hot. What is that about? Dawn Taylor in the back.
I don't know. Sheer perversity.
I bet you've had sex in a cemetery.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa!
All right. See, there you go. I knew without even having that. That was a thing. That was like some Karnak where I didn't even have to look inside the envelope. I
Dawn
just knew it.
Taylor, bad girl.
Honestly, you know,
I am.
You could throw a rock at a catalog of weird places to have sex, and whatever hits, I've probably done it. So.
Or I'm on my way there now. Walmart parking lot, 2:30.
It's on the list for later.
Would this have been in or shortly after high school?
No, I was in my early 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that surprises me, but I mean, you know, whatever. Okay.
No, in or shortly after high school, it was mostly cars or...
The art supplies closet.
Well, actually...
I have a pass.
No, the box office for the drama department, though.
Well done.
Did that. But also lifeguard stations on the beach.
Really?
Yeah, because you can get up away from the sand that
Meanwhile,
way.
Meanwhile, I just see a hand going down for the fifth time about 40 yards offshore. Yeah. The Kintner boys being attacked
by
a great
white. Well, it was nighttime. There's no lifeguards around.
Is that the lie you told yourself to make
nighttime.
It all right, Dawn?
Lifeguard's eyes are dead like a doe's eyes.
Uh-huh. The calendar features models from the UK, Germany, and Poland, and has sparked controversy in Catholic Poland.
No.
This is simply tasteless and shocking, said church spokesman Father Tadeusz Rydnik in Warsaw. Death is not sexy, and the connotations presented in this calendar are disturbing, to say the least.
Somewhere Gene Simmons is like, can't sue fast enough.
Apparently, Lindner also provoked similar outrage when they released another calendar of half-naked models with coffins last year and sold over 3,000 copies of that calendar.
I am a huge fan of this calendar. I wholeheartedly embrace it. Well, there's like that...
there's another in...
Have you seen that magazine that it's...
She's got a gun,
It's
too.
Like...
she's in like a camouflage bikini, and she has a rifle, and she's laying on top of a coffin.
There is that calendar that I think they sell at... I don't know if it was Things from Another World, but it might have been. Where were the Film Fever Radio Awards a couple years ago? It was like the Cosmic Monkey. But it was like some. But it was a magazine. It was like a cheesecake magazine. We used to call them. Where it wasn't nudity, but it was a lot of like revealing, you know, sexy ladies. But they were all either dead or zombies. And so it was just like hot dead chicks in bikinis. You know, they were like really dead. But I mean, you know, dude, chicks pretended to be dead or pretended to be zombies, but then they were like stacked or whatever. And you looked at it and you just had so many questions about yourself as a person and a man and just wonder like what – like that is the sort of thing where like you wondered if all that stuff about porn was true, that like you really are just ramping up to some eventual future where it's just going to have to be like, you know, chicks strapped to rockets with goats being shot into a colony of zombies, you know, surrounded by midgets on the moon, you know.
Being anally penetrated.
Yeah.
All that just for foreplay.
Yeah.
Just to get warmed
up.
Yeah,
just because you're like, I don't know, I just can't even get out of home, you know, out onto first base without that. It's bizarre, the sorts of niche fetishes that we've started to explore.
Well, these calendar photos, too, it's like I find myself trying to figure out, like, what the actual narrative is behind it. Like, there's the one with the chick in the wedding dress straddling the coffin and looking angry at the camera, Not sure exactly what the message is there. The next one, a woman dragging the coffin behind her by a rope.
Over a bridge.
Over a bridge with a bottle of champagne in one hand, and she's not wearing any pants.
I think that's how Phil Knight wants to go.
It's kind of, it's like, I'm like, why, where are her pants?
That's where she's going to get the pants, on the other side of the bridge.
Dragging a coffin? Okay. Is that her purse?
Let me just tell you, the car keys are always at the bottom. Here's how the difference between your mind and mine is that I'm looking at this picture of a woman with a champagne bottle and no pants in a wedding gown dragging a casket across the bridge. And my whole thing is like, I didn't even notice that she had no pants on, ever. My whole thing was just like wondering what bridge it was and where she was going. And if there were, you know, and if it was day or night, at no point did I even register the fact that she was pantless. And that, I think, that's because of years of exposure to men's magazines where they put women in these, like, holy, these, like, ridiculous poses. This is largely Penthouse as opposed to Playboy, where it's just, like, chicks, like, you know, shopping for frozen peas, you know, in the nude or whatever, just, like, in a supermarket, you know, where, like, everybody else is shopping normally, and then there's a chick, like, getting a Stouffer's dinner or something with, like, her, you know, with her whatever hanging out. I mean, it's just...
I had a Playboy centerfold, like, mounted on the wall in my bathroom when I was a young woman, and I had a boyfriend come over and ask me about it. He's like, so you're into chicks? What's the thing? I was like, no, I just find it hilarious. She's naked, and she's inside a British telephone booth wearing a Bobby's hat. What the hell's that about? Every time I see it, it just brings me joy.
It's one of those things where they let the manatees do layouts for a day. All right. Are we still inside the news segment? We are.
Yeah.
So let's we'll continue with the news. Still to come, we got your top five. You got your job watch, penis watch, stupid criminal of the week. And then I got to try the McRib here in a few. Also, we have these ham-flavored potato chips.
What?
You should open some of those right now. Go ahead.
I've been looking forward to the ham-flavored
potato chips. My wife got back from a trip to Europe, and she brought some mystery foods for us. And that's not a mystery, except that I don't really know if it actually tastes like ham.
Let's look at the nutritional facts.
There's a big picture of ham on the front of it, though.
It's a ham leg.
Yeah, it's not like a cute little pig. Like, hey, you're gonna love me. It's like, no, it's an actual slab o' meat.
She
with
got
a foot
these
on it.
In the same town where after visiting a thing that was, I swear to God, called the Museum of Ham.
yes, that we was are going.
Nothing. It was, and I think it was near the Dolly Museum too, which is how Dolly probably would have wanted it.
Does it smell like ham?
It smells like it has a slight pork like scent to it, aroma.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
it does, and not like bacon either.
Let's get with the eating.
Ham.
All right. Well, come on, fatty.
I'm serious. I'm just savoring the bouquet. Don't let it. I can let this breathe.
An interesting nose.
Rick's over there, like, making the chubby people eat the ham chips.
All right.
Dance, monkeys.
All right. Rick Emerson wet his beak here.
Hold yeah, on. This is, it's got almost like a Hormel kind of a.
It does taste like ham?
It does. Oh, my God. It's awesome.
Oh, wow.
It tastes like ham.
I can hear Wilford Brimley just grinding his teeth somewhere.
Oh, man.
And it's, I think it's gluten free because on the front it says thin gluten.
Mm. Mm.
I love that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, see, these are way, see, man, in Europe, they know how to do things. This is like when I, you know, a while back, maybe last year or so, I got those bacon flavored Pringles, so called. And the bacon flavored Pringles in America, first of all, they're not very good. Also, they taste nothing like bacon, they're just barbecue chips. That I think they made too many of and they needed to unload them or something. And so they put like a label on the front, bacon, under the theory that I guess bacon is smoked, barbecue is smoked, therefore it's the same thing. And they were just barbecue chips that had been labeled as bacon chips. It's very disappointing, especially because the pizza Pringles do taste exactly like pizza, like Chuck E. Cheese pizza specifically.
Yeah.
This is a bag of chips that taste just like effing ham. this is not unlike when I went to that. Is it Marks and Spencer? Is that the name of it? It's like
yeah.
It's like a kitchen caboodle kind of a place. But they also sell food, and they sold these potato chips that tasted just like chicken, like crisp chicken skin. Like when you roast a chicken and you go, oh, the chicken skin is the best. It
yes.
was a bag of potato chips that tasted exactly like it. I know this sounds gross, but it was so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
A bag of, like, crisped chicken skin.
And the American in me is just like, well, okay, what is it, ranch or honey mustard?
Oh, no,
what
no.
do you dip, what do you
oh,
dip
yeah,
that in?
Ham chip.
You know what the American in me did? The American in me said, that's great. Do you have any cream cheese? Great. And I bought a tub of cream cheese. And my wife, and we're in Bath, which is where Jane Austen is from. And so my wife is like, well, you know, we could go see...
And Jane Austen loved chicken-flavored potato chips.
No, it's true. It was a tribute to her. Because my wife's saying, well, like, we could go see this public house down the street where she wrote, you know, part of Pride and Prejudice. Rogers or whatever. We could go to this fountain where she first conceived the character, whoever. Or we could look. There's a fascinating kind of sandstone. I'm like, oh, that's great, baby. And I'm just like with a tub of cream cheese in one hand, chicken skin chips in the other, watching like Yes Minister, you know, and just like
I love England.
Yes.
This place is great. We should have something like this in America.
This culture tastes awesome. So, all right. Well, we might as well just continue here. Let me just open this other bag up. It is Friday, after all.
Oh, my God.
We're working up to the McRib, by the way. Okay, these, I should have waited, but I'm going to open these. I don't know what these are, so you're going to have some, Jim.
Okay.
These are cocktail japonés picante, and then there's a big question mark on the front, and I don't know what that's all about.
My guess is that they are like, if you go to... I remember when I used to go to the Bonaventure Hotel when I would go there to drink as a teenager because they would never card us because it was expensive. And it was frequented by Japanese businessmen, so they had Japanese bar snacks. And I think that's what this is. These are like Japanese bar snacks.
Okay,
and that's why it says Japones on the front.
There's a weird green one in the middle.
Yeah, it looks like a Yoshi egg from Super Mario Brothers.
Well done.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead.
And apparently we all got something different.
Okay.
Mine just tastes like...
I don't know what this is.
Dust.
Mine tastes like... It's like what I imagine packing peanuts taste like.
Yeah.
There's really no flavor here.
No.
Well, that was disappointing.
Oh, the little rice crackery things are good.
Yeah. The ones with the sesame seeds have little peanuts in them? Those actually aren't that bad.
All right. Oh. Hey,
intriguing.
Just like a sorbet to take the taste of those off your mental palate. I'll show you what we put online. My wife bought this in Barcelona. This is my Halloween mask for next year.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
How awesome is that? I very nearly came out to the kitchen to get you wearing this. But it makes my face sweat, and then I started to get hives. So I'm going to have to talc up before I can put this on again.
That's a natural reaction to wearing a mask such as that.
Is this not the best thing you have ever seen in your life?
The only imperfection that I've seen in is that the nose is too well pronounced.
Mm. Yeah, but I got until next Halloween to sort of work on it.
Are you going to get yourself like a band jacket with epaulets to wear with it?
The thing is, I'm unclear nice. About what clothing should accompany this.
I think you should get a band jacket with epaulets and a stuffed monkey.
I love this mask. This is the best thing I've ever owned in my life.
It is chilling, yet at the same time kind of comforting almost.
Strangely lifelike, yet not at all.
I mean, if you have just tuned in and have not been listening to the entire show, by the way, it is a Michael Jackson mask.
You can see
a terrifying rubber Michael Jackson mask.
It's awesome. You can see photos of this mask at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for November 5th. Once again at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do that penis watch, shall
Let's,
we?
Let's, shall we? All right. Hold on a second. I've got change.
Actually, no. I can hold that if I need to. I need to do Stupid Criminal of the Week.
All right. I've got strange Japanese nut product all over my hands. Hold on a second. All right.
Yeah.
Should I turn into Imus there for a second? Here is your Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Our good friend and listener, Andy, runs mugshotlist.com. All right, there's states from across our fine union, including Oregon, California, Georgia, Florida. New states being added all the time, updated around the clock, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by an army of robots. mugshotlist.com, based and operated right here in Portland, Oregon. Here's your Stupid Criminal of the Week.
A Nebraska teenager dressed as a mobile breathalyzing unit for a Halloween party was pulled over on his way home and arrested for drunk driving. Matthew Naveen, 19, of Lincoln, Nebraska, was arrested early Monday for driving under the influence and being a minor in possession of alcohol. Naveen drew the attention of patrol officers while driving erratically in his Ford F-150 pickup truck. It's not known whether the officers had a mobile breathalyzing unit to test Naveen, but they did find the incident ironic enough to include what he was wearing in their incident report. Matthew Naveen, the charge sheet read, he was dressed as a PBT, preliminary breath testing, alcohol sensor, and had been attending a Halloween party prior to the stop. Despite police identifying Naveen, they decided to obscure his face when handing out a photo of him still in his outfit post-arrest.
Is there a photo of him in the actual costume?
Oh, indeed there is.
All right.
Naveen's blood alcohol level was recorded at more than twice the state's 0.08 limit. Police say the teenager was not supposed to be drinking in the first place, let alone driving a large vehicle while drunk. Naveen is also accused of having an open container of alcohol in his trunk and negligent driving. A search of his truck turned up a bottle of vodka and beer.
Well done.
Interesting, this is not the first time a person dressed as a breathalyzer has been arrested for a drunk driving offense. Last Halloween, an Ohio college student wearing a similar costume was also arrested for drunk driving and being underage in possession of alcohol.
Fantastic. There you go.
No, the funny thing is, this isn't homemade. This is like something that he bought in a store somewhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, look at the three levels of drunkenness on the front of the breathalyzer costume.
Loser, having fun, and brain damage. Yes, and then the breathalyzer tube is at his belt line.
And it's labeled blow into
insert here, into in, mouth.
Insert into mouth.
I hope they made him wear the costume while he was like being held in the holding cell
in the tank.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it's like they took this picture of him like in the lobby of the police station.
That's where the cops couldn't wait to post that online.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it must be a bit of a stressful evening when you're working Halloween at the average police station.
Gary, get your iPhone out here. We got a live one.
You got to make your own fun.
Well, that fellow is our stupid criminal of the week.
There you go, stupid criminal of the week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Fantabulous. All right, let's do a couple more. We'll actually take a break while I heat up the McRib. And then we'll come back on the other side. We'll talk more with Big Jim Willie. We got your top five songs about autumn/fall on the way. And more. Here is Don Taylor.
An elderly white man boarded a plane in Hong Kong and turned into an Asian youth somewhere over the Pacific. In an incredible breach of security, the passenger, wearing a mask that made him look decades older, doddered past security guards whose heads and onto an Air Canada flight on October 29th. Then he walked into the plane's lavatory, where he took off the mask and calmly returned to his seat. Upon landing in Vancouver, Canada, the quick change artist was escorted off the plane and immediately claimed refugee status. The reason he pulled the bizarre stunt remains a mystery. I don't think it's a mystery at all. He wanted to get from China to Canada and claim refugee status. Security agents removed three pieces of luggage containing the man's clothing, a pair of gloves, and his disguise kit, including a silicone head and neck covering, a leather cap, rectangular glasses, and a brown cardigan. The man was apparently able to slip past several guards and get on the plane after swapping boarding passes with a 55-year-old U.S. citizen.
So how was the how extensive was the mask? Was the disguise? Wait, so that is okay. I know this is a horrible thing to ask. Is that him in disguise or out of disguise?
I believe that's him in disguise.
Okay, so that is him masquerading as an old white man.
Right.
He looks like Johnny Knoxville from the Jackass movie.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, you got to figure like maybe if he's in the vicinity of a burn clinic or something, it's not like that's so outside the realm of possibility that
Freddy Krueger's grumpy uncle.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, if you had like I think the key to wearing that disguise and making it work is to have some sort of really off-putting body odor or just some other personal trait that, you know, where like they wander really quickly and like, all right, Gramps, and they just move you like, you know, just a reek of stool.
complaining just, about popular music.
Yeah, and they just wave you through as quickly as possible before, you know, and you say like, I'm going to leak any second now. And they go, okay, come on, just head on through. Incidentally, just speaking of that guy, airplane security, these interesting Japanese nut items, and then also my wife come back from Spain. So we went through the other items she brought back, and true to her word, she brought me an endless number of T-shirts that have scary-looking Arabic writing on them. and it all just says things like, you know, it's like eat at Joe's or whatever. But then it's, you know, but it's all but like crescent and a star in front of it. You know, and a guy holding a scimitar, like looking
hanging
really
there, angry. Kitty.
Yeah, you know, come to Crazy Hector's rug store. No. So I'm gonna wear one of those the next time I have to fly somewhere that I don't really want to go. So like if I have to go to Provo or something, that shirt goes right on. All right. Awesome. Real quickly before we break, I wanted to play this, Don, because I think I teased this maybe yesterday or the day before. I said that I had this audio, but I didn't get a chance to actually play it for you. It was because we had the Obama sound. Was that on Monday that Obama was eating in the cafeteria?
I think so. Yeah.
Let me see if I can actually if it's Monday here, because I referenced this piece of audio. This is a day for finding lost things because you bring in the McRib is back sound, and I brought this other terrible accent sound that I thought was lost to me forever. Let's see. So this is Obama. If I'm playing the right one, this is him. He was stumping before the midterms on Monday. He was at a cafeteria, and this is great on two levels. The two things we latched onto here were the cafeteria woman noting in the affirmative that she did in fact vote for Obama and in fact did vote for all y'all, followed by Obama saying, this is where he says the where my dinner to the cafeteria worker. Let's see if I can.
Thank you for looking after us.
That's right.
Okay.
You got it, Abby.
Barbara, did you vote? Did you vote?
I voted for all of y'all.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the stuff, where my dinner?
Right there, the where my dinner.
Where my dinner?
Which is great. And so we've noted that that is not just a political thing. That is an old-time sales tactic where you just assume the dialect or the mannerisms of whoever you are speaking to, because then they, you know, they feel they've made a connection. So lest ye think that we're just picking on Barack Obama. So this is Hillary Clinton.
Oh, good.
Right before the 2008, I guess this would have been maybe leading up to the South Carolina primary, because she's speaking in the South. Hillary Clinton, who by the way, has not a trace of an accent the rest of her life. This is Hillary Clinton speaking to that audience.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
So
that
go.
Is the best John Wayne impersonation I have ever heard.
Oh, so it's just awesome.
I don't feel no ways tired.
Right there. It's just, I mean, really, it's just part of the glory of the American political process. All right. Hey, we could probably get Chris Dudley as a guest now.
Probably.
All right.
Is that doing anything else? Other than, you know, like burning his houses to the ground for money.
Just sitting there just trying to figure out how can that insurance fraud be the most believable. We will come back after this. We got Mr. Big Jim Willig on the way with more discussions of things and whatnots. Also, your top five songs about autumn. We got the penis watch deal to get to and so forth. You were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
About beauty and we sing about truth. $10 million a show. We take all kind of pills that give all kind of thrills, but the thrill that we've never known is the thrill that it gets you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my smiling face on the cover
of the Rolling Stone.
Jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine. Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown like the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the little teenaged blue-eyed groupies would do anything we say. We got a genuine Indian guru, he's teaching us a better way. We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone. And we keep getting rich, but we can't get our picture on the cover of a Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I want to see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I want to buy 5 copies for my brother.
Rolling Stone.
On the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. Wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
Gonna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
See my
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. You know, I've even gotten to this dark chocolate Kit Kat thing. All right.
Or the mystery candy from abroad.
The Loufle. Here, I'll hand that to you.
Oh.
By the way, did you know, Don Taylor, that the ham-flavored Ruffles potato chips, that they do, in fact, on the front, there's like a ham leg with a foot still attached?
Yes.
I don't think that would go over in the States. You're right. I think we like to forget about the smiling, happy portions of the animals that we eat.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of food here in the United States that's just a picture of meat with the limbs still attached on the label.
But the amount of, you know, processed food and variations of, you know, different animals kind of just sort of thrown together, why not at that point? I mean, because we eat such things that are so much more vile than actually just, you know, put the meat on there. Put the meat on the package. I want to know what I'm eating.
Imagine if a head cheese would be labeled. Just be a conglomeration of just, you know, just some Rube Goldberg creature. Just some Dr. Moreau kind of animal going, I shouldn't be eaten.
So this Loufle candy bar, it shows the candy itself, which is milk chocolate, obviously. Then it has these little globules of chocolate, like, flowing out of it on the label. I have no idea what's going on.
See, it's like chocolate buckshot. Loufle.
Bubbles.
Well, that's all leading up to the main event, which
is really, really delicious milk chocolate.
You can have that, Dawn. We'll call that my. Here's the thing. See, Dawn shamed me by bringing me a 100th show present. She not only found a long missing and much lamented soundbite.
McRib is back.
But she then actually brought me an actual McRib because I was noting that I'd never had one.
And I gave you half of my dark chocolate kicker.
And half your dark chocolate kicker.
I'm so awesome.
It's because...
I am just freaking awesome.
Well, because, the 100th show, that's a significant milestone.
Absolutely.
A thing one wishes to celebrate with pork and fat.
Mm.
And so I'm looking here at the McRib. Now, you asked why if I had dissected it. The thing is...
Yeah,
so
you took it out of the bun.
Well, you bought it like at 10:30. So that is 5 hours ago nearly. And as you noted, this is incidentally... If you missed this earlier, I should actually put a picture of this up later. It had eaten a hole in the side of the box.
Trying to free itself.
It was like either the box was trying to get away in bits and pieces or the McRib was trying to get at us. And it was, you know, sort of tunneling out the side like one of those zombie wasps.
Well, the level of grease in this thing is such that just sitting in the box for a few hours, it actually like ate through the wax-covered... You know, grease-resistant McDonald's box.
Now it's got 30% more xenomorph meat.
My only hope is it'll actually make its way through my system before it starts to turn on me as well.
Race everyone runs when you eat a McRib.
Well, here's a knife if you want to cut off a small portion to eat it. I don't know. What are you going to do?
You mean cut off a small portion for you? I was going to cut some off for you guys.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to figure you don't have any kind of a utensil.
No, but I got the bun here.
You do have the bun.
This is what I was going to say when you asked why I took it apart. Because you can't microwave bread, especially bread that is already a little bit moist. Because then it just becomes, here's the thing, because then it gets the sog. And it's like, I am one of those guys, I cannot eat like the sog. Like if you get the Subway sandwich or whatever and it's got the sog, I actually have to cut the paste bread away. You know, it's one thing if it's a little bit moist, but when the bread gets flat out soggy and squishy, I have to remove that. So I actually microwaved and heated just the meat portion inside, and then so it's going to be like a McDLT kind of a thing, where the buns are actually going to be sort of room temperature.
Is there like one tiny shred of onion just sitting there sadly on top of the McRib?
It's a garnish. You don't actually eat the onion.
I actually removed the pickles because Keelan had said he's like, no, he's like, you don't have the pickles with that. He said, here's the thing. I'm looking, I almost feel like we should ring him up here. I wonder if I can, hold on, let's see what happens if I just dial him.
You know, if you put the record down, you'd have two hands to do
that. I got to keep this next to me at all times. Look, it's taken me this long to get a McRib. It's not like I can't let it out of my sight now. Hold on, we're going to see if this will actually, call my cell. I'm at work. Damn. All right. I'll tell you what, let's see. I'm going to dial him. He's pasting his number into the thing. So I'm going to call him in a second and he'll kind of give us the explanation because he was really, really concerned that the first experience I have with the McRib, that it be, you know, that it be all it could be, that it live up to all of its, all of its potential. All right, so...
Handcrafted by artisan chefs.
I'm calling his cell right now. All right. The weird thing is that there's no actual bones here, but the meat has been molded to look as though there are bones. There's like faux bones in this.
What's good, sir?
Hello, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got the McRib here, so I've heated now. Just so you know, so I've heated it up. I took the patty, the McRib center, the meaty middle. I took it out, put it on a plate, put it in the microwave, hit the popcorn setting, which I find is a good all-purpose setting. It's sizzling. I removed the pickles and I restored the onions. The buns themselves aren't warm as such, but they are at room temperature, which I would say is maybe in the mid to high 70s right now. I am going to put it all back together and then take a bite. Do you approve? Because I know you have all this like disproportionate, you're all really vested into whether or not my McRib experience is satisfying.
Yes, this is paramount. For some reason, in the food sourcing department at McDonald's, someone who lacked any sort of ethnicity decided that dill pickles somehow went with barbecue.
When you do raise and a fair point that, it, like in regular barbecue, like I would never just think like I should add pickles to this. So yeah. it does seem to be a thing that doesn't make much sense.
Right. It's ludicrous and it fills me with rage because it ruins the McRib.
Well, I would have told them to leave the pickles off, but it never occurred to me that there would be pickles on it in the first place because it makes no sense.
All right, so.
It's just like that. It's just like if you get those McGriddles or anything like that, or even if you buy them in the store, they come with cheese. What the hell? When was the last time you got up and had breakfast and had like a big ass plate of pancake sausage with cheese on the pancakes? No one puts cheese on pancakes.
I sense the potential for an exciting new blog that becomes the darling of the internet. The McGriddle.
That's going to be my new blog. Who puts cheese on pancakes?
Is the McGriddle the thing that's like a sandwich between pancakes?
Yeah.
It's like two little blueberry waffles with like sausage and egg or something in between the little blueberry waffles.
And they have like tiny little bits of like hardened syrup shrapnel that when they warm it kind of like becomes a little bit more gelatinous.
Really? So it's like the whiskey in Alien Resurrection.
Absolutely.
Okay. Here's the thing about the McGriddle is you know who loves the McGriddle and the only person prior to this phone call that I really had the discussion with is Daria.
Oh, my God.
Daria is all about the McGriddle. She confided to me as though like revealing, you know, that she was once a man or something. She's like, don't tell anybody, but I love the McGriddle. And here's the other thing. Have you noticed in America that we have now reached some sort of saturation point where the only choice we have is to put foods in or around or inside of other foods, like a sandwich with pancakes or the KFC, the double decker or whatever they've got, the double down.
We've already invented every food that there is to invent. So now all we can do is add flavors or combine things that already exist. So you end up with abominations like, you know, cherry, like grape flavored Dr. Pepper, you know, or sandwiches made out of a cheeseburger in between two donuts.
Yeah, eventually they're going to have like some kind of a soda that you will drink through like a cheese straw so that you can actually then eat the straw afterwards once it's been saturated with the soda.
They already have cookie straws.
Yes.
So you can get like an Oreo cookie in a straw form and drink your milk through the cookie straw.
Wait, hold on. They have straws made of cookie?
Yes.
And eventually, cups made of bacon.
Why did you keep this from me? How is it that you could?
We live in the same society. I just assumed you knew.
Where would I get a straw? Anyone? Where would I get a straw made of cookies?
Oh,
grocery store.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, they're
in
around.
What in the straw probably, aisle or the cookie aisle?
Probably the cookie aisle, or maybe by
yeah,
where?
Yeah, they already have that. They already have those Slurpee straws made out of the sour straw of candy.
Oh, you're freaking me out. All right, okay.
You never used a Red Vine as a straw?
Okay, no, I've done that.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to try. Okay, this is before it gets cold again, so I'm going to try my first bite in the McRib here. All right, huh?
And lives have changed. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Oh, no.
I have to say, that's really quite good. Well, I'm a fan. No, sir, you didn't lie.
And with that statement, Rick Emerson, I hereby nominate you a black man.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. So say we all.
Wonderful. Does that come with like a patch or a badge or something? Or a sash that I can wear?
You get a nod when you're on the streets. You get a certain
weirdly,
kind of
nod. Weirdly, you are now more attractive to white women.
You don't have to send you're already attracted to white women. And I sent you the tube of magic shade, so you've now got to use that.
No, this is true. And I've got the Magic Shave, which is a hair care product for the stylish black men. That it basically is like magic shell ice cream topping. You put it on your face, you let it solidify, and then I swear to God,
Keelan's telling me this. He's like, and then he's like, and then you scrape it off with a spatula.
What?
And apparently it just, it's like the hair just kind of comes with it or breaks off or whatever. But he sent me like Magic Shave and like a spatula. He's like, here you go. Because I was, because I hated shaving with the blade.
Yeah. So the razor bumps.
Yeah. So there you go. Awesome. All right.
Just one word of advice. Do not let that stuff harden on your face or your skin will come off with it.
Oh.
Oh, you mean the Magic Shave, not the McRib.
Don't let that harden, sir. The instructions are quite clear.
Awesome. Now I just need to pick up a copy of Hey Soul Classics, and I'm all set.
Oh, maybe I should have told you about that. Oh, well, anyway.
Could I borrow that copy of Soul Classics?
No, my brother, you got to buy your own.
Oh.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
All right, guys.
There's Keelan. All right, awesome.
there's been some apparently some rumblings in the McRib fan community though that originally the McRib was 99 cents and is now up to $2.79, $2.99 in some markets. So people are irritated by the astronomical price of the McRib. But
they got cabs. Learn to drive one. Seriously, you know, you can get bent.
And now from the news desk. This is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our penis watch while you eat your McRib.
Cram that pork in your mouth.
Here's the thing. I was gonna go heat this back up so the buns would be heated as well. But here's the thing. Is I actually cooked the interior of the McRib so much that it's now like it's radiating out through the buns. This is awesome. I'm so glad. This is the best present anybody's ever given me, Dawn. Thank you.
Pork and uranium 238.
I'm so happy to be alive. All right. This is really what our men overseas are fighting for. I'm sorry. Here's your penis wax for Friday. There you go. That's the stuff. Here's your penis watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio
Take
program.
A look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything going my way.
There is Dawn Taylor with your penis watch.
Montgomery County police have released surveillance photos of a man they say dragged a woman into some woods in the Aspen Hill area. I believe this is in somewhere on the East Coast. It should have said at the top, but it doesn't. Let's just pretend we know where it is. Drags a woman into the woods in Aspen Hill and sexually assaulted her until she halted the attack with a bite. The suspect received a severe laceration during the assault last week.
Good for her.
Corporal Dan Frizz, police spokesman.
Well done.
The suspect remains at large. The case goes back to October 26th, just after 11 p.m., when officers were called to an area of Connecticut Avenue and Independence Street. The 30-year-old victim told police she was able to get away after fending off the attacker by biting him on the penis.
Ooh.
Police described the suspect as a Hispanic man with a thin build, 20 to 25 years old, 5'6" tall, with short black hair and a clean-shaven face. He was last seen wearing a black T-shirt and black pants and suffering from a severe laceration of the penis.
Yeah, I would say you'd be looking for a man with a crotch concavity at this point because you got to wonder, I am glad that if it had to happen, it turned out this way, that she bit him and you got away and whatever. But you got to ask yourself about that guy. Like, how bright are you? Clearly, the answer is incredibly non-bright, that you are assaulting a woman and then you say, hey, would you please place this between your teeth?
Yeah.
I mean, how dumb do you have to be?
Apparently, it's not that uncommon, though. I mean, I was in high school and this woman came, this very scary, very butch woman came to give us, like, self-defense advice to teenage girls. And one of the things she told us, and when you hear this when you're 15, you never forget it. It's like, she told us things like, you know, don't try to kick him in the groin. He's going to expect that. You know, kick him in the shin, bring your foot down on top of the thing. And also, if you somehow manage to trip him and knock him down, kick his kneecap really hard and dislocate his kneecap because then he can't chase you.
Awesome.
And she also said, and if he is foolish enough to put his penis in your mouth, bite it off.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't even just say bite it. She said bite it off and keep it because it's evidence.
Make a necklace out of all the penises.
Leave it there as a warning to the others.
Put all those tiny pikes in your front yard.
At which point there was a gym full of 15-year-old girls going, ah!
Yeah, I think you for all of us.
Yeah, right, and all there. The guys who were on the recess chair just shuddered all at once. Like,
they didn't know why. Yeah. You know, a cold chill just went through my body.
Like a Stephen King short story.
One of the, I don't even know if he still does a radio show, but G. Gordon Liddy had a radio program at one time in the 90s, and a woman had called up and she said that she had moved into an area where there had been a lot of sexual assaults recently. And he's like Mr. like Nietzsche and reinvent yourself, you know, can kill a man with a pencil, hold my hand.
hand over a flame guy and, you know, really about being self-reliant. And he's written extensively about self-defense, especially for women. And she actually said, so, Mr. Liddy, I'm curious, you know, what I should do. And he, bind it off. That's what you should do. Well, what do you mean? Bite it. Bite it down. Your jaws have 5,000 pounds of pressure. Bite it off and twist and turn your head. And he was just like really, like he was really, really decisive about it, which was sort of great. And then he said, and at some point, he may ask you to put something in your hands. Now, I urge you just to squeeze down and twist your hands as far as you possibly can. And then this is the phrase he used. She said, until the grapes just come off the vine.
Oh, God.
And I was like staring at the radio. It was like the first week we aired the show, and I had to convince my general manager to pick it up because he was not inclined to, because Liddy had gotten into a whole bunch of trouble for talking about. This is like during the Waco, Randy Weaver, Ruby Ridge, all that stuff, where like the ATF was like, you know, arresting separatists and whatever. And Liddy had gotten into all this trouble by saying, and by the way, if the ATF comes to your home, you should shoot them in the head. And like, that's not me saying, that's G. Gordon Liddy. And you know, and he said, they wear bulletproof vests, so the forehead is the only place you can shoot them. And so he had gotten, but apparently it's not that he was like in favor of that as such. He just, you know, he just knew a lot of ways to kill a guy. And thought, why selfishly hog that knowledge? But that was his whole thing. He's like, if you bite it down, he's like, believe me, he will be far more concerned with finding his genitals than finding you. But he didn't say the thing about keeping it as evidence. So
an extra little step to keep in mind, ladies.
To be able to use it as evidence, do they just line up a bunch of eunuchs and then, okay, drop trowel. Okay, no, that doesn't fit. That doesn't fit.
Having to match tab A to slot B.
I suppose, though, a crafty defense attorney might be able to argue that, you know, just because the guy's missing his penis, it might have happened in like a threshing accident.
Yeah.
Who knows? Something else could have happened. You know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, but if you have the penis, you can go, I demand that you match this penis to his crotch. Well, it's like, you will see that it is the self-same penis that he is missing.
Well, here's the thing that I wonder about, and I can't believe we're talking this much about penis severing, but then again, I can, I suppose.
It's a hundred show. Why not?
I almost want to find, this sounds horrible, but I almost want to find someone who has had to bite a penis off and see, like, how difficult is that? Because you got to figure it's a little gristly, you know? And I wonder, I'm not trying to be horrid, that's just sort of a side benefit here.
It would be hard to actually remove it. Well, you could bite in, obviously, enough to damage them badly.
And it not being flaccid, obviously, it's going to be having a lot of blood being pumped to it. That's also going to lead to some of the difficulty.
Now, if you have your bottom teeth replaced with diamonds like Kanye West.
Yeah.
There you go. He's impervious.
No one tries to put their penis in Kanye West's mouth.
No. No, no, no.
That's the marketing slogan we're going to send to potential advertisers. All right, there you go. Awesome. Bite it off. There's your penis watch for Jesus, God Almighty. We'll do the top five here in a moment, and then we will wrap things up. There perhaps is no more inappropriate moment to mention that Squires Electric is the, I was going to say proud sponsor, but I'll just say sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio program. They've been here for 12 years. They've been in Portland for 12 years. Joe Squires grew up in Washougal and then spent, we've said this before, and it sounds like a gag, but it actually is true. He spent a lot of time working on nuclear submarines, and I swear to God, knows how to fix a nuclear steam leak with a belt and a mattress. And I don't mean like a, I'm not talking about like a big Sherry Heiner mattress. I mean like a little tiny like military mattress. He can fix a nuclear steam leak with that. So he can certainly handle like, you know, like whatever difficulties your toaster oven or whatever is giving
you. The guy already needed chocolate bars. This guy just needs a belt and a mat, whatever's handy.
That's what I'm saying. We're going to have him on the show at some point to kind of talk about this. Also to talk about the business that Sarah has a stun gun and we want to know exactly why it is that they don't seem to keep people down. And also that... To discuss this business that Dawn revealed last hour, where you actually just, without even unplugging the toaster, now do you take, is it always a fork that you stick into the toaster, or is it sometimes like a spatula?
No, sometimes it's a knife.
Always, as long as there's a metal handle involved, you'll make sure to use it,
exactly,
though.
Exactly, yes.
I mean...
Sometimes a bagel or a piece of toast just kind of gets jammed, and you just want to, like...
But there's the plug is right there. You could just unplug it.
You could, but
that's quitter talk.
Where's the challenge in that?
This way you get to play like an ad hoc game of operation.
Exactly.
Okay.
When it goes. You really feel it.
Yes. well, in any event.
Why is Bill hairless? Funny story.
If somebody offers you an apartment in, let's say, Tualatin later on this year, and there's just a bunch of scorch marks and footprints in the kitchen, and they say it's a real fixer-upper, you might want to have the electrical panel looked at.
What smells like burnt 12 grain in here?
Oh, nothing. That's just that flesh flower outside. It does it every 6 years. Joe Squires, they will do free estimates at Squires Electric. No job too small, no job too large. Everything from a single light socket to an entire office building. That is true. They have done that. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. All right, here is your top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Here is Don Taylor with your top five. So today we have the top five. These are the top five songs about autumn, fall.
Yes, these are my top five songs about autumn. So I won't make you take any kind of credit for them.
So you're not saying these are the definitive objective.
No,
this is in your assessment.
These are just my top five favorite songs, probably about fall.
Awesome. These are Don Taylor's top five songs about fall. What is your honorable mention, Don?
Honorable mention is James Taylor, September Grass.
Okay.
Because I can't help myself. I love the sound of James Taylor's voice.
Nothing wrong with that.
And he didn't write this song. It's from his October Road album from 2002. But it's just a lovely little song that makes you think of fall.
This, I believe, is the first time we've played James Taylor on the show.
In the sky today. And you know I can see summertime slipping on.
I'm trying to have feelings about this song, and I'm just sort of Teflon.
It's a thing, though. You know, some artists, it's not even a matter of really liking his songs or his music so much. There's something just about the tone and the timbre of his voice.
It sounds like
pleasurable to me.
You can almost hear a smile when you hear it.
Yeah.
Like he's
a warm blanket
yes.
of music.
So I'll be king, you be queen. Kingdom's gonna be this thing.
Okay, so this is like, this is the day after your husband has died / dumped you, and you're setting out on a road trip with Renee Zellweger under clear blue skies.
I would never go on a road trip with Renee Zellweger, though. I can't stand
I'm just
her.
Saying.
Maybe Sandy Bullock.
Okay, there you go.
Rag tops
sure.
down,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Throw in some James Taylor.
Awesome. These are the top five songs about autumn. Don Taylor, number five.
Number five is U2, October. This is actually from their album, October, from 1981, which is, I believe it's their least popular album ever. Nobody actually liked it. It got crappy reviews. It didn't sell. Nobody
a
liked
bad
it.
U2 album?
It was, everyone just really hated it. And I'm not sure why, but I actually like this album, and I like this song. And the weird thing about fall songs, though, that I noticed is that they tend to be really, really kind of sad. There's a reason why, I guess, the term autumnal, when it's applied to music,
yeah.
you know, brings to mind this kind of, like, downer kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like they always say that January 1st is the beginning of the new official year, but it's not really the case because by January, you know, winter's well established, all that. When fall starts, it's like Mother Nature's getting cancer and like her leaves are slowly falling from her trees, leaving her a shallow husk of what she used to be. But the good news is, you know,
way to end things on an up. Well
sorry.
Done. Jesus. All right. These are the top five songs about autumn / fall. Don Taylor.
You know, we never even got to Bono singing.
Yeah, no.
Just we talked about cancer and then moved on. I'm
pulling the ripcord.
Pulling the plug, as they say.
Number four is Guns N' Roses' November Rain.
Well done.
Another one, though, this starts with this whole, like, kind of...
almost like a funeral dirge.
Yeah.
This is actually... let's see if I can get this, right. I believe this is the first song that Axl ever wrote for Guns N' Roses. In other words, of all the Guns N' Roses recordings, this is the first one he ever wrote. I interviewed a guy named Mark Cantor, who wrote a book called Reckless Road, which is a
not a coffee table book, but it's basically, you know, like a photo book of shots of the early days of Guns N' Roses. None of them taken after Appetite for Destruction. In other words, because he lived with the band,
yeah,
and he lived with Axl. And it's all of these photographs taken before. The last photograph, I think, is them going into the studio to record Appetite for Destruction. So it's all pre-Appetite. Anyway, he tells this story about Axl Rose coming home to the apartment one night and going like, hey, do we still have, they had like a little tiny Casio keyboard, or it's like, do we have that little keyboard? And he's like, yeah, why? And Axl's like, I'm going to work on this song. And he pulled this like little Casio keyboard out of the closet and then just started to play this song, November Rain. And he's like, I've just been humming this melody, you know, all day. And he talked about being in the room the first time Axl ever played November Rain. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
And the thing is, I've never been a fan of Guns N' Roses because I just don't really like Axl Rose's voice.
Right.
And it took me a long time to come around to this song because the video is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So my first exposure, like a lot of people, to this song was seeing this just insane, ridiculous video.
Slash playing guitar in front of a church.
By the way, it cost them that church. That church was flown in via cables dangling from a helicopter. They lifted the church up from like a street like three towns over where they saw it because they liked it, and they dropped it in the middle of that field, and it cost them $250,000.
It's like death clock money.
To move the church just so he could stand in front of it to play that solo.
I finally, though, came around to the song weirdly because I saw them perform it, a live performance of them doing it with Elton John on piano.
Yeah.
And I realized I had that moment where the light bulb went on and I went, this is an awesome song.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
This is like one of those songs that gives you an out to say that, you know, not everything about the way Guns N' Roses kind of played itself out. You know, you can say that, yes, I do like November Rain. Don't like the band so much, but this song, you know, it's easy to kind of affix a personal memory or moment to with this song.
Well, and I love Guns N' Roses. I'm a huge, huge Guns N' Roses fan. And the thing about this song is that it's so easy, as you said, just to label the band or Axl primarily with just one facet. You know, with a couple, you know, he's the guy that shows up late to concerts. He's the guy that causes riots. He's the guy that writes racist songs. He's the guy that whatever. And, you know, all of those things, true. You know, but then he also creates this. And you realize when you hear this song, the other part of Axl Rose, which is that he, you know, that he is a kid from Bloomington, Indiana, who was forbidden to listen to rock and roll, and the only thing they'd let him listen to is Elton John. And so that's what they gave him. That's what he had. That's, and you can hear right here. This is, I mean, that made a huge imprint on him.
Wow.
I also think it's, but I all have to say that I like the fact that Elton John never distanced himself from Guns N' Roses, from Axl Rose. Because I think he obviously was able to separate the stuff from the stuff, from the music, from the whatever. And he has never, just like he didn't with, you know, with Eminem, he never stepped away from that. Even when the benefit that he got publicity-wise was overshadowed by the detriment. He always kind of, I think even just like last year, Elton John showed up and sang this or something. You know, some song with Axl Rose.
There's a point,
somewhere,
though, I think, in with some people, though. It's like, I think probably Paul McCartney is kind of the same way. Bill Gates. I mean, there's this point where you're just like, man, I'm freaking Elton John.
Yeah, do what I want.
I don't care. I do what I like.
Well, you know, he just sang at Rush Limbaugh's wedding.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. It's like Rush Limbaugh getting married, you know, I do. And then in the background, there's Elton John, you know, playing.
Oh, my God.
And there's this picture later of, like, Rush Limbaugh with his cigar going like, hello. And Elton John with his arm around him just going like, hey, and giving the thumbs up. And you just, like, it breaks your brain.
Like Sammy Davis Jr. and Anton LaVey.
And Anton LaVey.
Yeah.
Good reference.
Thank you.
I love this song. I love this song. And this is part of that trilogy of Don't Cry, November Rain, and Estranged.
Yeah.
All of which had insane videos for them. Estranged has that thing where he leaps off an aircraft carrier and then swims with dolphins.
Yeah.
Freaking retarded.
But no, this shows like the more delicate like Slash. Like he's not killing, he's not beating you over the head with chords. Like he's taking it real slow and then just like showing like very delicate work.
It's almost like the song reminds me a lot of Layla, actually, because it's got that same, that weird coda where it almost becomes a different song altogether.
Yeah.
Because Layla has, you know, the rock guitar part and then just like that delicate piano slide part, and then this has that whole, it stops and there's that dun da da dun da da and that kind of martial thing that starts at the end. Well chosen, Don Taylor.
Thank you.
Very nice.
All right. Here's number three. These are Don Taylor's top five songs about fall.
Number three, Fall in Philadelphia. This is Hall & Oates. This is from their first album.
I know almost nothing about Hall & Oates, so...
It's from their first album called Whole Oats. which I believe was
really?
Like
Whole Oats
72 or 73. They didn't actually hit until 76.
Well, with album titles like that, it's no wonder.
Yeah. Oh, and the album cover is hysterical because it's sort of a black and white, like gray tone thing, and they're both glammed up like David Bowie with like.
I've seen that
with the their cheekbones shaded, looking sexy into the camera. Oh God, it's horrible.
Here's why I know that album cover, because I'll bring this in one of these days. If you've seen, I think this made it into the final cut of Bigger Than Jesus, but there's this moment of Bigger Than Jesus when I take out this book that my mom got me when I was a kid called Backward Masking, Unmasked, about devil messages in rock, like Hall & Oates, of course.
Clearly.
And his big beef with Hall & Oates was not that they're satanic, but that they're bisexual. and he uses that album cover as evidence,
yeah,
and I gotta tell you, it does look pretty bisexual.
See, this is one of the few, like you said, fall, autumn type songs that is kind of upbeat, kind of happy. Yeah. It isn't quite like dragging you down the whole time. It's like, hey, you know.
It's kind of because fall has always been my favorite season.
Same here.
Because I grew up in Southern California and I hate the sun. And it was always hot. And I finally.
You must have had a swell time as a kid.
Oh, for the love of God, summer's almost is finally over now. Hooray. And then September brings my birthday. And the new fall TV season, and the start of a brand new school, which is like a whole clean slate, where I would have that hope that, you know, I'm starting all over fresh. Maybe this year I'll be popular.
And you get to buy new pens.
Yeah.
Awesome. These are Don Taylor's top five songs about fall. Number two.
Number two is Green Day, "Wake Me Up When September Ends."
Very
great
nice.
Song.
And yeah, for many reasons.
And an astonishing video.
Yes.
We all seen the video for this?
Yes.
Yes.
I remember the first time I saw the video for this, I had no idea what to expect. My friend Joni showed me this. She's like, oh my God, come over to my house. Have you seen the new Green Day video? Which, you know, we were already old. We were like 30-something then. But, you know, I think I had left behind the time in my life when somebody called me and said, oh my God, have you seen the video for? Come over, we got to watch it. And I went over, and the video is, I think, I want to say it's Jessica Biel. But it's somebody. It's like some Jessica Biel type chick.
Rachel Evan Wood.
And I mean, you sort of think it's about them breaking up. You think it's about him cheating
Rachel
on her.
Rachel Evan Wood and the kid from Billy Elliot, whatever his name is.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's, and you know, she's on the phone, you know, yelling at him, or, you know, in the living room, and she's yelling, saying, how could you do it? I thought you loved me, whatever. And you think he's cheated on her. And then as soon as the drums come in at the end, it cuts to that scene of him getting off the bus at basic training, and they shave his head to go to the military. I get chills actually thinking about it. It's an amazing video.
And the interesting thing is that that's not what the song was actually intended to be about.
His dad, right?
Yeah, he read it as a tribute to his father, who was a jazz musician who died of esophageal cancer.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's a bad way to go.
Didn't Jack Palance have
that? Yes.
Yes.
It's a great album. One of the great regrets, actually, of my music fan life is that I did not see the American Idiot Tour when it came to Portland, because I was unemployed, and it was that thing where I felt guilty. I felt like I didn't deserve, like it was wasteful to spend $50 on a ticket. And everybody was telling me, like, you got to see it. And I loved this record, and I thought, no, I'm a loser. I don't deserve fun. And I have always regretted not seeing this tour, because this is such an amazing album.
Absolutely.
From a band that nobody expected anything of. Their first album, their first major label album is titled after poo.
Yeah.
Well, this is another thing, like, you know, the way I came around to, you know, November Rain later. It's like being, like, having been, like, a punk rock kid in the punk rock day, took me a long time to come around to Green Day because it was like, oh, yeah.
It's not real punk.
Bunch of young kids pretending to be punk rockers like the old punk rock, trying to sound like The Clash, you know, and it's like, but this album was what actually sold me. To just go, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, their first
there's actually something there.
The first big song was all about, you know, pleasuring yourself, you know, and then like the way that the group has decided to evolve is one that they make no apologies. They don't try and placate to anybody but themselves, and they just keep cranking out really good stuff. So it's like it's getting harder and harder for you to be like, oh, they're just
it's a fluke.
Damn, I love that song too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is they didn't try to do some after American Idiot when they did 21st Century Breakdown. They didn't try to do that thing of like making a record on a four track, like a faux
demo. Yeah. Like, we're going back to our roots and making a street-sounding record. Like, they made a record that was even louder and more arena rock-sounding than this one. I have nothing bad to say about Green Day.
Proof every punk rocker's got a soft side.
These are the top five songs about fall. Don Taylor, what is our number one song?
Number one is Frank Sinatra, Autumn in New York.
You gotta be kidding me.
Well done.
Very nicely done.
And I have to tell you, I waffled back and forth deciding this version of it or Billie Holiday. And I finally ended up going with Sinatra.
Autumn.
Ah,
there it is.
Come on.
Why does it seem so inviting?
Shall we dance?
Okay, seriously, we've got to have three channels. We've got to have one channel that's just Iron Maiden, one channel that's just Stevie Wonder. We decided the other day we were going to start a second, like a Rick Emerson 102 channel or whatever, that was just going to be Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden.
Nice.
Looping 24 hours a day. And then we decided we wanted to have one that was just looping Stevie Wonder. So we should have one that's just Sinatra, too. How great.
That voice can melt steel.
It took me a long time to warm to Sinatra, actually. It's sort of an inversion of one of your stories. I resisted Sinatra because I associated it with, you know, my grandparents. And it was, you know, I'm trying to, like, carve my own identity or whatever. Yeah. And the whole thing about that is, like, immediately then rejecting whatever you heard growing up. And growing up, my mom just listened to, like, gospel, and my dad just listened to country, and my grandparents all just had this stuff on. And I was like, ah, that's for old people. And it wasn't until I was, I don't know, in my late teens, early 20s, that I actually heard Frank Sinatra for itself, that I was able to strip everything away from it. And it was kind of astonishing how beautiful
it was.
It
swings, baby.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, well, it's timeless is what it is.
The if you're out there and you're thinking of starting your Frank Sinatra collection, there's a box set called The Capitol Years.
Yes.
And it's all Sinatra stuff that he did with Nelson Riddle, and it's just exemplary.
Yeah. That is actually the thing, I think that might be the thing I started with. It's like three discs or something.
Yeah.
Actually, I've mentioned that, you know, so Lara's back and Halloween is over, so we're going to take our Halloween stuff down in a few days, which will make me a little bit sad. But then we basically just wait like a week and then we go right to decorating for Christmas.
Yeah.
It's like, which we do like, you know, like November, you know, 9th or something. And I have this whole, every year we have the whole, you know, ritual where like we make the, you know, like she gets wine or we make cider or whatever. And we like have the, you know, all the stuff that we bring up from the basement. She tries to put a costume on the dog and he bites her and he runs away and then we get some gauze. And then
very
I've got
Norman
this,
Rockwell.
Exactly.
But then I've got this mix that I put on every year. And it's half like down-tempo, like electronic Christmas stuff, which is better than it sounds. And the other half is Sinatra. It's all so it alternates back and forth between that and the Sinatra stuff. Yeah, he really was made for fall and for and for summer nights.
The summer wind, baby.
Yeah. Summer wind.
See, I got to throw in a little Nat King Cole in there, too. But it's that same timbre that's, like you said, like with James Taylor, that timbre of the voice that is just, you know, it can't be denied. And it's never going to get old. People like young will be like, it's like you said, it's for old people. When you get old enough to truly appreciate music for what it is, you got to understand that even the bands that you love, love these artists because of that same reason.
Well, the quality that both, like, Sinatra and James Taylor had, too, it's my mother said this to me when I was young, and it's, I think it was probably the truest thing she's ever said. He sounds like he's singing directly to you.
Absolutely. No, that is the thing. That's totally the thing. And I have, there's this album by, this Sinatra album called In the Wee Small Hours.
Mm.
And it's like considered one of his all time like heartbreak, you know, like, you know, it's, you know, 2 a.m., you're all alone, you know, because she has left and you're just drinking.
Empty box of wine at your feet.
Yeah, just like whiskey straight and just going, what is this thing called life? But I have that record and I have done that thing of just like sitting there going, and I will die alone. And I, it's Frank and I, but he sounds like he's singing it right to you, which is corny when it doesn't work. But when it works like this guy, I mean, it's just, you can't deny
it. Like, that's the thing is, you know, with Sinatra, obviously timeless. You got guys nowadays like Michael Bublé who they kind of have that same voice, but it sounds like he's talking to the room.
But Harry Connick Jr. is actually pretty good at that to a certain extent, but nobody did it like Sinatra.
No.
On the on that subtle, sophisticated note, I just saw Sarah Dillon in the back of the studio mouth the phrase, I have to pee.
Hi, Sarah, how you doing?
Doing great, thanks. My voice is back.
Your voice is fantastic. Well done. Mm-hmm. I thought you had like whatever Greg had. You were like at some plague or pneumonia. I didn't know you were just drunkenly screaming at karaoke.
It was beautifully singing Cher.
Oh, sorry.
That's
sorry.
Okay. I suffer for my creative karaokeing.
So we are going to get out of here in just seconds to let Greg Nibbler and Sarah X Dillon in here to tape Fun Employment Radio, which you'll be able to hear at funemploymentradio.com around 6 o'clock Pacific time tonight. So I was hanging out for a couple reasons. A, to see if you guys wanted to try some ham-flavored Ruffles.
Ham-flavored potato. Oh,
these things are incredible.
They're from Spain. I swear to God, they taste just like ham. It really is. It's pretty astounding.
I will not stick my hand in there, so I will not pass along any sickness. Even though I don't think it's sickness, I think it was just drunken karaoke.
I don't know. I might have a hard time. I don't like the flavor of ham.
Everybody likes
the flavor
of ham.
I like bacon, but ham is something, I don't know, I have a problem
don't
with.
Don't be a meat bigot,
it's why
Nibbler.
It's funny that they're actually from...
Look at the reaction right there.
Ew. That's weird.
It is
What's
weird.
Funny that they're actually from Spain.
It's weird and delicious.
When I went there, I couldn't eat anything for pretty much 3 days because everything
it's all
was
ham.
And that's all it is.
I swear to God, no, she got these at a place called the Museum of Ham.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, Museo del Ham.
That is bizarre.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, if you think that's bizarre... Hold on a second.
Oh, no.
Oh, close your eyes.
Yes.
Close.
Lara brought this back from... she brought this back from Barcelona. This is my Halloween mask for next year. Okay,
there
go ahead.
Go.
Oh! Holy God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wish it was Halloween tomorrow.
It can be Halloween every day. You should just walk around the streets with that thing.
I almost went to the door this morning. You know, like there was some like, you know, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints guy at the door, and I almost answered the door in this.
Oh my God, you have to.
You should order a pizza just so you can go to the door.
That, a cod piece, and like an open bathrobe.
Oh, that is wrong. Oh,
yeah.
How much do I owe you?
You can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures. So real quickly.
You want to sit and watch Moonwalker with me?
As we...
the pizza's here.
As we wrap this up, don't forget, Big Jim Willie going to be headlining at the Baghdad, January 14th.
Yes.
Tickets and times to be announced. Find out more at facebook.com/Jim Willig. 2 L's, 1 G. That is Willing with no N, right?
That is correct.
Facebook.com/Jim Willig. So thank you for joining us. And I was going to say, today is our, we've been talking about, you know, today's our 100th episode. And, you know, and so we want to thank all the listeners for, you know, supporting us and, you know, and always being there for us and et cetera. And, you know, and just, and really kind of sticking by us through thick and thin. And I was just told you guys this in the hallway and I didn't know this. So please now to tell everybody what you told me.
Yes, it is our 1 year anniversary of starting up Fun Employment Radio today.
Yep. So I had no idea. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Thank same to you guys.
Thank
this
you.
Is
yeah.
exciting. Our
Excellent.
Anniversaries fall on the same day. This is awesome.
Just bizarre. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I would have brought you a McRib too, had I known.
Oh yeah, I'd never
a McRib?
Yeah. Seriously, McRib totally back.
Ew.
I had never tried a McRib, so for our anniversary, for 100th episode, Dawn brought me a McRib sandwich, and she found the Jack Osborne McRib is back sounder.
I was going to say, I thought that you loved McRibs because you played that thing like 1,000 times.
Yeah, I've never actually tried the McRib. So
how were you satisfied?
It's fantastic.
Okay.
I am a big fan of this. I'm staunchly in the pro McRib camp.
It looks like it's made of like Sloppy Joe's or something.
That's kind of what it tastes like.
Yeah.
It's like a Sloppy Joe, but like with popsicle sticks in the middle of it.
Oh.
So it's quite good.
A little woodworker's glue to just seal a deal.
Indeed. All right, on that note, so we're going to bring our 100th episode to a close. Greg Nibbler, Sarah X Dillon, you can hear them at funemploymentradio.com coming up just a bit later on today at 6 p.m. Pacific time or so at funemploymentradio.com. Mr. Big Jim Willig, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Legion of News Encore's next, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye now.